Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to another exciting episode of Side Stories. I am Aaron. This is my co-host,
Ryan Mooney.
Thank you one and all for joining us today. We're going to continue our exciting episodes on the Woodstock Festival as a whole. Woodstock in all of its transcendental, wacky, hippie, tie-dye, wasted, nonsense, muddy glory.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up perfectly. I was going to add something on top of that, but no, you covered everything.
I try.
Really good job. You did a great job.
I try to keep these shows as concise as possible, also as informative and fun as possible.
You definitely nailed it.
You know, thanks. I should have you on every episode.
You should.
Well, crap. Hey, we want to be on again?
Sure.
Okay, neat. We'll have to find another topic. Yay.
Cool. Awesome.
Okay. Anyways, so today, folks, we're talking about one of the Woodstocks you've probably heard of, but it's also the kind of middle child of Woodstocks.
I was literally just gonna say, yeah, the stepchild of all the Woodstocks.
Yeah. So Woodstock 1994, the only one held for a non decade anniversary. There's a word for that, and I'm missing it. But it's 25th anniversary for this one. But it's the only one held on like an off kind of year in that sense. Even though I know 25th kind of gets roped in a anniversary, but whatever.
It's like that one of those special anniversaries, but it's not one of the big ones. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's its own little thing. But anyways, this one was held on the Winston Farm, and I hope I could pronounce this name. Oh, gosh. Saugerties, New York?
Looks like it. Sure.
Saugerties, New York. Okay, again, sorry.
Saugerties.
However, people there will know it, and they'll
Sausage
yell at me.
Tees.
That's a bad name for a town.
I think it'd be hilarious.
It would be. In many ways, this festival... So, again, many people have probably heard about this. Again, probably do more to the recordings and the footage than actually being there, much like the actual Woodstock, because for as many people as showed up to the original Woodstock and this Woodstock, the album and footage just can reach so much further. That's just kind of how these things go.
Yep.
But this one, again, you know how we talked about foreshadowing earlier?
Yeah.
This one really has all the foreshadowing. This is
where the plot really starts to get heavy.
Yes,
and you're like, I see where all these plot points have been leading to.
They really just did it again.
Yep.
Honestly, this is the true Woodstock 2.
Mm-hmm.
So
Woodstock 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
Let's go.
And for good and for ill, by the way. So
this was the direct-to-DVD sequel.
But it was actually shockingly good.
Yeah,
it should have done
way better than it had any right to, higher of a budget.
People are overachieving for their cash grab sequel, honestly.
Absolutely.
So originally this one was planned to be 2 days, but it spilled into 3 days. Well, actually that was planned this time.
Really?
Because what happened is that they had a 2-day festival planned, but so many artists wanted to perform. This is the opposite problem. Instead of artists you have to scramble and get them for the original show, this is the one where people are rushing to get to you.
Like, please, I want
to
be in this.
Yes. So they had to expand it to 3 days because so many people wanted to sign up. Which is nuts.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually... So they're starting off great for once.
That's a really good omen, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, this is put on by Woodstock Ventures and all their corporate sponsors and all that. Like, this is run by the actual Woodstock people.
Yeah.
And the Woodstock company, which sounds weird, but it that's how it is. That's how this works. So, 94 included a star-studded lineup of Woodstock alumni, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Joe Cocker, Santana, John Sebastian, The Band, and others.
Ooh, The Band.
Acts that notably missed the first show but made it to this one included Bob Dylan and the Allman Brothers.
No crap.
He finally made it this time.
That's really cool.
They were finally able to get him on. And contemporary acts, and there were a lot, Sheryl Crow, Jackal, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nine Inch Nails,
what?
Metallica, Primus,
what?
Blind
what?
Melon, The Cranberries, Green Day, Aerosmith.
What?
Yes.
Okay, whoa, hold on. We're not just going to blow up past this. Okay, so Red Hot Chili Peppers, they're later at 99. Nine Inch Nails.
Yep.
Trent Reznor, wouldn't have guessed that. Metallica, also at 99. Mm-hmm. Primus?
Yeah.
Primus.
Yeah.
And then Green Day.
Yes.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure I hadn't stroked out or something.
And that's not even counting all of the people that were there. That is just a short list to kind of give you an idea. So
God, that is just eclectic.
And yes, it is. What you have to remember, though, is that a lot of these artists are kind of different phases in their career.
Right.
A little bit like the first one, though. There were big headliners and up-and-comers at the first Woodstock.
Right, right.
But this one, we're getting the alumni are coming in. We're also getting people who are just starting to build up. This is kind of the event that really gets Green Day into the mainstream, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's part of it, for sure, because they've been bubbling under, but
God,
this
I
is actually
Green
right
Day was that old.
This is right when Dookie came out, actually. This is the event that gets Dookie to the charts.
Really?
Yes, we'll go into that later, but
again,
Metallica and Aerosmith, obviously very established bands by this
what
time.
What era of Metallica was this, by
this is
point?
Right before Load. Load was coming next.
Gotcha.
This
okay.
is kind of the end of, like, because I'm trying to remember, early 90s Metallica is weird because it's Justice for All, I think, is
which
the last
is the one
in the 80s.
Which is the one that everyone really likes.
Or they hate. It's one of the two. Ride the Lightnings, I think, is the one that... And
that's
the Black Album.
That's the first one.
No, that's the second one. Kill 'Em All's the first one.
Thank you.
Yep. And then there's Master Puppets is 3.
Yep.
By the way, I've seen this. I've seen Metallica live, and I'm not the biggest fan, but I don't mean to knock them, but I also don't mean to love them, because Metallica is one of those bands, if you hate them, it's normie. If you love them, it's normie.
Yep.
It's like, there's no, like...
You can't really win with them.
No, so. And I'm not trying to be edgy by any means, but just, like, I've seen them live, and I'm not going to go into it. They were fine.
If you like thrash metal, they're great.
Yeah, if you don't, they're not going to be that impressed. Nah. This is also in that weird period before they did the alt-Talica thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's right before that. This is kind of when they still had that, like, metal credibility sort of thing.
They were still cool
right
before they
the
sold
edge
out.
Of it? Yeah.
Was this pre or post Napster?
This is pre-Napster.
Ooh, so yeah, this was when they were still cool.
Yes, and yeah, again, there's a lot to say about Metallica. Metallica is the kind of band that you could do a whole, like, literally a series of documentaries on.
Just go deep dive, like, each year on it. Oh,
yeah. Well, like many other bands. Like, you could easily do that for Santana or Aerosmith for Nine Inch Nails, too, but it'd just be different. But anyways, yes, so this is the kind of the eclectic mix of things that are really mainstream, a little more alt, older alumni, people who are legends, that kind of thing. And this is the first Woodstock that they've really been able to make into, like, a launching pad for artists kind of thing, like the first one was. Like, the first one where they can really both bring back people but also get big contemporary acts in. Because then the other two that we talked about in the previous episode, 79 and 89, if they really even happen at all, like 89, which is the weird kind of camp-out thing. But they didn't really... The problem was they couldn't really get new people in there, right?
Right.
This time, a lot of new blood's risen up. Like, a lot of these people are riding highs. This is actually a year after Aerosmith's biggest album, which was Get a Grip.
Oh, nice.
Which sold, like, over 20 million copies worldwide. Like, insane. Still their highest-selling album. Like, they are hot right now.
Yep.
Like, they're here. Green Day's just coming up. Sheryl Crow is Sheryl Crow and feels like she's been around forever somehow.
She'll never die.
I don't know how she doesn't age. It's like Cher, it's scary.
Yeah, dude, I just stopped questioning it. She's probably a vampire.
Probably. Like, they're getting
Sheryl
a good...
Sheryl Crow, if you're listening, I'm joking.
Yes, but they're getting a good mix of people in there, right? They finally got the big name acts, but you still got the older people. You could finally get the event going on. And much like the first Woodstock, it became a free event just as it was starting. Because this time, a huge horde of people forced the gates down like an invading barbarian army.
Let's go!
And once again, there wasn't any real way to charge admission or kick them out.
And again, more foreshadowing.
Yes, more foreshadowing. But this time, again, much like the first show, it went well, shockingly.
It went well.
Because I think the numbers I read, it was like 100,000 people showed up outside the gates, just kind of pushed it down.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like people really wanted to get into this. And no joke, they did kind of the same thing where you could pay for tickets before showing up and that sort of thing. People had tickets. Yeah, a lot of the people who paid for tickets at Woodstock in 69 and 94 just got kind of screwed because...
Just got ripped off, yeah.
Yeah, they just made it a free show. But this time, the event promoters actually did the right thing. And again, it's mostly a lot of the same people that were involved with the original Woodstock. Like Michael Lang's running around. A lot of other people are there. But this time, there's a lot more corporate sponsorship. That's something that we'll get into in a little bit here. This was a lot more like
more
official. This was a lot more official, if that word applies there.
Yep.
But basically what they did is they went, oh crap, more people showed up. And just like the first Woodstock, hey, let's get more supplies brought in here real fast to accommodate them. And so they just built as many extra facilities as they could, brought in more staff, and basically just said, okay, best of luck. And
Have fun.
The most part worked. Thank God.
Thank God.
Because overall, Woodstock 94 had roughly the same number of people in attendance as the first Woodstock, estimates ranging from 200,000 to 500,000.
That's really impressive.
Yes. Now, of course, some people do estimate that the original Woodstock had like a million people,
I take that with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, or maybe they're counting people who were just kind of in the area.
Yeah.
Which, again, you could count for this one. I feel like numbers for this one are a bit more official just because it was later, and there was more like actual staff and planning.
More way to like actually keep track rather than just looking at a herd of people and being, that's probably 100,000.
Yeah, and people are probably a little less high at this one. I mean, it was still the 90s, but like, the 69 to 94, people
difference
got a lot more clean.
Difference in climate. Very big difference in climate.
For sure. Like, I'm sure there was still wanton drug use.
Oh, absolutely. It's Woodstock.
Probably less.
Yeah.
Probably less.
Hopefully less.
We pray. And again, despite having to take on a rush of apparently 100,000 extra people, they still got the facilities and everything relatively working well. And so far as I know, things pretty much went well at this one.
Heck yeah.
That's kind of why there's not a lot to say about the actual production of this one, is because they just kind of ran with it and it worked like the original, but just not quite as like interesting because now we have phones and email and stuff. So like you don't have to go and get a cashier's check so the Who will play for you because people are actually paid and want to be here instead. So it's just Woodstock, but frankly better.
Yep. It's what Woodstock should have been.
It's literally how it should have been the first time, which is why it's not like as you can't delve into it as much. Like there's, you actually talk about the show on this one. It's the one Woodstock you actually talk about the show.
One
other than the other defining feature was mud.
Mud.
So much mud.
Mudstock.
That is the nickname people call this one, is Mudstock. In fact, again, if you watch footage of people on the ground there, people were calling it Mudstock while in the mud.
Every document, like literally any video you see of this video, you will see people just caked in mud.
Yes.
And it's like, it's not even like you think caked in mud and you're like, oh, okay, you know, a couple splatters on like their shirt here.
A mud man.
You cannot discern like human bodily features. Mm-hmm. You can barely see their eyes level of caked in mud.
Like just like they are walking blobs. They're walking puddles.
It looks like something out of a B movie.
It
really does.
It looks like a really bad like swamp zombie movie is what this looks like.
It really straight up does, yeah.
And that's what people are. It looks like how muddy it is. And the reason for the mud, by the way, is that heavy rains came down, I believe, before the event, but also during the event.
Mm-hmm.
And that resulted in an incredibly muddy landscape. So, yeah, just it was a huge, huge, huge mess. Everywhere is mud. However, many concertgoers seemed delighted by this. There was people rolling around in mud. There was mud wrestling. They threw mud at performers.
Oh,
if
that's
you
hilarious.
Watch videos
and
of the show,
more foreshadowing.
Yes, if you watch videos of this show, there is so much mud being tossed during certain sets. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
There were, in fact, people who performed completely caked in mud. For example, Nine Inch Nails rolled around in the mud. The whole band before going on stage, and they did their whole act completely covered in mud.
Good for them.
And the nice thing is that, again, much like the first Woodstock, this is all filmed.
Yep.
If you want to watch any of these shows, they speak for themselves. You can go and watch them.
Heck yeah.
You can find them pretty much all on YouTube. And unlike embracing mud, though, like Nine Inch Nails did, Les Claypool from Primus, however, implied that people throwing mud had, quote, small genitalia, unquote. What a pansy.
Dude.
What a
just
pansy.
One more reason I think Primus is just not a good metal
band
to listen to.
Are you saying Primus sucks?
Yes, Primus sucks. But I'm not saying it ironically. I'm saying it truthfully.
Truthfully. I kind of agree. I'm sorry. Les Claypool, if you want to come and beat me up, do it on the podcast. I will happily record it.
As long as we can monetize it.
Look, I have to. If I'm getting beat up, I'm at least going to get some money for
Absolutely.
It, okay?
That's your American right.
That's the only. Like, I don't sell out on other things, but I'll sell out on getting beat up, okay?
Absolutely.
I have standards. Also, Green Day also embraced the mud and welcomed it being tossed at them. In fact, it was a clip apparently massively replayed on MTV of them getting just tossed of mud.
That's hilarious.
I believe one of them needed to go to the orthodontist afterwards. They got hit in the face with so much mud.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it either broke a tooth or hit part of their jaw or something like that. I don't remember which one. But yeah, you can see him getting hit by it. I'm sorry, I know there's Billy Joe Armstrong and the other two guys. I can't remember the other two
guys.
It's Green and
like,
Day.
One of them is literally like Trace Bueno or something like that.
Oh, it's Trey. Yeah, that's his name. Whatever.
You're all good.
It's been a long time since I listened to any Green Day.
All good.
But also, one thing I had to mention too that was really interesting is that Aerosmith's brought in via boat. On a river. Yeah, late at night, because they went on after Metallica, but it started raining, so they played like however many hours later in like the early, early morning at like 2 a.m. Yeah, and Steven Tyler almost dove headfirst in the mud because he was... The thing is, in Aerosmith, most of the guys in that band were actually at the original Woodstock.
Right.
And now here they are playing at Woodstock, and it's a huge thing. So Joe Perry was at the original, Steven Tyler was there, Joey Kramer, the drummer, was there. They're like, oh,
big
man.
Big spiritual event for them.
Yeah, it's going to be big, right? And they're going up to the show on this boat. Joe Perry talks about this in his book. I should have mentioned this on the first episode. I'm going to cite all the sources in the description of all these videos. Again, if you're listening on Spotify or somewhere else, if you can't see it because I couldn't fill it all, check Podbean or YouTube. I'll definitely include all of the sources in the description, at least a link. I don't know if I'm going to do full Chicago Turabian citing. I know I'm a history major, but I'm tired of doing that. And
it's
just
a lot of work.
It's just my podcast, dang it. But anyways, I'll at least cite the pages in his autobiography, which is a great book. I highly recommend. It's called Rocks, My Life in and Out of Aerosmith.
Oh, heck yeah.
Highly recommend the book. I've read it multiple times. But anyways, I reread the part where he's at Woodstock 94.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going up on this boat. He's talking about how it's like Apocalypse Now because there's like
mist
that comes over the river.
Oh, that's great.
And they're hearing, like, drums and all this sound coming from down the river and all the lights.
Oh, that's dope.
And they're floating towards the river. And they finally get there and they see all the big corporate sponsorships and all the mud. And Steven's like, I'm going to do it. And he literally stops at the last minute and goes, I guess we should hit the stage first. And then they do a killer set. And then they get off stage. And I'm sure everyone ran around and got covered in mud. So, there's that's kind of like the pinnacle. But like, other than Metallica, who actually, they cheated at Woodstock 94. Reason is, you're supposed to, apparently the, I don't know if this is an unspoken rule or if it was like a hard rule, you're supposed to bring one production truck. They brought like four or five, basically so they could tick everyone off and have a bigger stage show. So like, when they played one, you know, the World War One song, they had like the sounds like machine guns, and I think they had like pyrotechnics going up. Like, it sounds awesome. Probably the best Metallica concert ever, honestly.
Probably.
Other than that one in Eastern Europe, they had like a million
standard.
People. Yeah, I know it's not. Again, I've seen one. I'm sorry.
I'm not. I'm not.
Maybe
I stand
not
by
sorry.
My decisions.
Okay, look, I've seen them once. I don't really have a need to see them again. I apologize.
I haven't even seen them once.
Fair. But
amen, brother.
Yeah, anyways, like, there was a lot of fun. This one, just again, like, I want to talk more about like the little nitty-gritty details, but it's mostly like Les Claypool got hit by mud and he was mad.
Yeah.
And then Billy Joe Armstrong was hit by mud and he thought it was funny. And like, it's basically, that's
really
how you talk about
the
show.
Just kind of a goofy little fun thing that
it
happened.
Was like, it, apparently people actually made money. People got a little mad about, like, because there was so much corporate sponsorship, which, I mean, that was the other defining thing. Like,
yeah.
MTV was also there. They covered it. There was a pay-per-view, which apparently did not give you the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. Which I know it's 3 days, but like, still, like, if you did pay-per-view, apparently like they didn't cover most of the actual weekend shows, mostly just Friday.
Oh, that's what?
Yeah,
okay.
A lot of people like that I saw just kind of talking about this said MTV's coverage was lousy, but again, that was before my time, so I can't really rate it. But that's just something I saw floating around out there. And also in articles and stuff I read, apparently people didn't like that.
Interesting.
Also, lots of merchandise sold, as you kind of expect for a big show. And they made it free, and they probably saw that coming like last time, so honestly, merchandise probably a smart move.
Absolutely. You got to make the money back somehow.
You can't go... $500,000 in debt. That sounds kind of bad.
No,
it's a bad idea, so you gotta make it somehow. So apparently that all sold like hotcakes, as did the CD, by the way.
Good.
Apparently, in fact, I also ran that, remember that experiment I mentioned last episode where I asked people about Woodstock? I asked one of my coworkers who was in the right age range to kind of remember this.
Yeah,
he wasn't at Woodstock, but he said, oh yeah, I remember the talk about like 99 and 94 and all that. And he said apparently the CD you saw everywhere.
Interesting.
It's like, ah yes, it was one of those ubiquitous CDs back then, when people actually went out and like, we had a society and all that, and we like just went and talked about music
in
stores.
CD, to the CD store.
Yeah, the
where
CD
there was
rack.
A teenager with a goth makeup behind the counter.
And life was like, fun?
Yeah, and you'd go buy the CD and they'd silently judge you for buying something mainstream. And then you'd walk out feeling gratified yet slightly judged.
But also happy that you made someone mad because it was funny and it was the 90s and that's what you did apparently.
That was the 90s. You were just edgy. People were edgy like that in the
90s. So that's, again, I would talk about the production of this more, but there's not really much to say other than it's shocking it went off without a hitch other than mud.
Yeah, it really just sounds like, again, kind of an ideal Woodstock experience in a weird way.
Like, all the articles and documentaries I watched were mostly just about the show. Like, just the actual artists, which is fine.
Yeah,
like,
which
that's
is
what
ideally
you want.
What you should be talking about
but
with
it's
this.
Like, I didn't want to just give, because again, that just speaks for itself, honestly. Like, you can go and find that in 5 seconds if you want to learn about that. So I just wanted to kind of cover the basics and maybe a few things you hadn't heard about this one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to shortchange 94. Honestly, it sounds really cool.
It's a really cool one. It's just, like, it's not a complete disaster.
There's nothing to talk about production-wise, really.
Yep.
Like,
I
know Woodstock Ventures was involved, but like, the people there don't talk about it. Though, I did find, this is interesting, one thing I can talk about is that on the Woodstock website, which is, again, run by Woodstock Ventures, they reference 69 the most, obviously. Makes sense. There's even a tab that gives you to write to the artist list that was on 1969 of their whole set list and then ways you can watch it, which is really cool.
Mm.
But if you look at their, like, kind of, like, the background of the website, if you kind of dive deep into the pages, you will find plenty of references to Woodstock 1994.
Really?
Like, yeah, they still talk about it. They post little things about it and, like, thanks for being at the show and stuff like that. Like, it's cool. But you will not find any about 99. I scoured everywhere.
Yeah.
I could not
find you noticed that too while you were
doing
research.
Reference. And they have a search bar. Yep. You can search through the website. And I tried band names. I tried years. I tried people's names. I could not find one thing. And their archive for that, like, little search database goes back to 2014.
I wonder why.
I know.
It could be any reason.
But again, you can find 94 reasons.
I wonder if later in the podcast we'll get into
it. We will get to that, but that's all I got. You got any final thoughts for 94?
Again, it just seems really cool, and I kind of wish I could have been there.
Yeah,
that's
been
really
fun.
All there is to say about it more than anything.
Yeah, so it made It worked out.
Just a good vibe.
Yay. For once it worked.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yay. Inspired by Woodstock, there was this weird Polish thing I want to talk about real quick.
Oh, yeah, Poland.
So, Poland. Great Poland. Country. Beautiful place. Beautiful people. Wonderful. Awesome. But anyways.
We love you, Poland.
We love you, Poland. We stand Poland in this household. God bless Poland.
I was going to start singing the Polish national anthem, then and then I realized I didn't know it.
You have no idea what it sounds like.
No idea. I was like, wait a minute.
You're just going to start making like random gargling noises. I was offending the entire nation of Poland and the one guy in Poland who listens to this show.
I was going to.
We love you.
I was going to start singing the Canadian national anthem and substitute Poland.
Oh, Poland. Like, that doesn't work. Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Reason I mentioned Poland is because there's like a sort of Polish knockoff of Woodstock.
Let's go Poland.
Okay, so this has been held every single year since 1995, like in the wake of 94, right?
Really? That's hilarious.
It used to be called Woodstock Festival Poland, but it is now called Pol and Rock Festival. And if you're wondering why I pronounced it weird, it's P-O-L apostrophe A-N-D apostrophe Rock Festival. The only thing it's missing is a few umlauts.
Oh my god, that's really clever, and I love it
Pol
a lot.
And Rock Festival. Yeah, it's clever. Yeah, good stuff. I assume the name change was a trademark thing. I could not find a reference on that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a lot of stuff written
about
it.
One would have
Polish,
to imagine.
But they do have an English website. Like, this has still been going. It's been going every single year since 1995. On their website, they claim it is the biggest non-commercial event in Europe. There are no tickets sold. It attracts hundreds of thousands of people every year, often up to 500,000 or more.
That's cool.
I think it was. I think it was 750,000 was the highest, like, confirmed total at one of their festivals.
That's cool.
Yeah. And again, they try to make it a big mix of, like, kind of more classic artists, like Judas Priest plays there, and Sabaton also plays there.
Okay.
And then they also have, like, more small acts, or, like, electronic, you know, artists, and it's a big mix of, they even have, like, a map of the grounds you can look at of how they set it up, and it looks gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a big, big thing, and I wanted to mention just because it's not an official Woodstock, you used to use the name, I'm assuming they got sued or something, I couldn't tell you. Tried to find that information, couldn't find it out there, but it's been organized by the same guy every single year. His name is, I'm sorry, Poland, I'm going to try my best. His name is Jurek Owasiak.
Sure.
He goes by just Jurek, though. He's mononominal.
Good for him.
Like Cher. So there you go. Yeah, it's not officially Woodstock, but it is. They do mention that it's directly inspired by Woodstock, by the way, and he's been very open about that. So, like, it's just Polish Woodstock. Cool.
Really cool.
I wanted to mention there's this weird spinoff that, again, is one of seemingly one of the biggest annual concerts on the planet.
And yet it doesn't get talked about ever.
At least not in the U.S. Again, in Europe, I'm sure it's just the talk everywhere.
Yeah.
It's moved to different Polish cities and all. It's always in Poland, by the way, but it's
very
moved
cool.
around.
You
it's been
go?
There. Well, I would love to. It sounds awesome.
Let's
do
it.
Dude, I hope friggin' like Judas Priest plays when we're there. I would love to see friggin' Judas Priest.
I always wanted to.
That'd be so cool. Random thing. Do you remember when we saw Joan Jett and then we had Fargo knockoff Judas Priest there?
Oh my god,
great?
I was literally thinking about that yesterday. Knockoff John Halford.
Rob Halford.
Robert Halford. Sorry.
And it's like the guy was like, oh gosh, I think the band was called One Night Stand. Shout out to you.
Yeah.
You were great, by the way. Amazing local opener for Joan Jett. I'm never going to get a chance to talk about this ever again.
Homie was dressed to the nines.
He was like Rob Halford if he became a high school chemistry teacher instead
yes.
of joining Judas Priest,
yes.
and it was perfect. And he really sang. What was the, because they ended on the Judas Priest song.
Yeah.
Because it was the only Judas Priest song they did was their ender, and I think it was Living After Midnight.
I was going to say that too. I'm pretty sure you're right.
I hope I can find footage of that somewhere.
I didn't
plan to talk about that, but shout out to them. Great
needed to.
Band.
Needed to be addressed.
See them in Fargo if they're still going. God bless them. Let's get to Woodstock 99, Ryan.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's
this
talk about the one everyone wants to hear
this
about.
This is the one you came here
this
for,
is the, this
kids.
Is the
Let's
main event.
You knew what you were in for when you decided to listen
now,
to these two episodes.
Real quick, I do have a few things, because
okay.
I know you're going to take
Ooh.
Lead on this.
All right.
I want to mention just a few small things before we get started here, because I found such amazing fun facts about the production
Hit
of Woodstock 99.
I want to hear it.
So, first off, to avoid mud issues, they organized Woodstock 99 at a different location. This at first seems wise, but then
yes.
you realize how they held this was the problem. Not so much location, but it was held at a location called Griffiths Business and Technology Park in Rome, New York. So it was literally in Rome, too. This is often misreported as being at Griffiths Air Force Base, which is a misnomer. It's kind of true, but also not. Griffiths Air Force Base was closed in 1995, before the concert.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was turned into the business park, which it remains to this day. Much of the Air Force Base structures were still intact at the time of the Woodstock event, and I believe still even today. And the Air Force still maintains a presence at Griffiths, notably what is called the Air Force Research Laboratory, which they do the military thing where the Air Force Research Laboratory is like a broader, like, kind of branch or like overall organization in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And then all their branches are just called Air Force Research Laboratory, like, location.
Right.
If even. So, like, on the website for Griffiths Technology Park,
yep,
they list the Air Force Research Base, but it's okay. just called Air Force Research Base, right? Like, it's that kind of weird naming scheme they do. But,
yep, yep.
But the reason I bring this up is because the Air Force Research Laboratory is the main research and development center for the U.S. Air Force.
Which is just hilarious.
Also, by the time I actually went down an Air Force rabbit hole. I have relatives in the Air Force. They would love me so much if I told them that I did Air Force research like this. I'll have to share with
Shout
them.
Shout out to Aaron's family.
I went down the Air Force rabbit hole where, again, they had just reorganized. I guess the Air Force used to have, like, multiple branches that covered, like, R&D.
Mm-hmm.
It got reorganized into just one because this was the weird post-Cold War, but before War on Terror, where we just Yay! Didn't know what to do for, like,
well,
a decade.
We got all this money,
yeah,
and no one
And they just had
against.
Those reorganizations of the U.S. and all that, like,
yep.
military and all that, and, like, they're still funded. This organization still exists to this day, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But because they had just reorganized, and then 4 years later, the Durst Down happens right in their backyard. I was freaking out. I thought this was amazing that right where the infamous Limp Bizkit incident happened, there, not far in the same park, is the Air Force Research Laboratory, where probably highly sensitive materials is stored.
Yep.
I also checked the website. This is all public information. Rome handles information now.
Awesome.
I'm assuming that's what they handled back then.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I also found out that the Air Force Research Laboratory is headquartered out of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which, if you're into conspiracies and weirdo stuff, which
oh, yeah.
I find fun. I don't believe in most of them, but I find them fun. Other than Area 51, this is where the aliens are supposed to be in the
Yay!
U.S., and it's literally under this same organization. So it's
Aww.
Literally from Fred Durst to Air Force Research Base to Wright-Patterson Base, so it's only a few degrees of separation
I was just
to
gonna say,
aliens.
It's 3 degrees of separation.
To
that,
alien conspiracy
that's,
theories.
Oh,
so fun fact for you there.
That's wonderful.
Also, I have read that luckily there wasn't any damage to any military property during all of Woodstock 99.
Nice.
Luckily. Though they did have it, some of the events, in hangars, which would have
right.
been former U.S. military property, which is hilarious to think about. Yes, so that big muck fest was happening right next to where
that is
very
awesome.
Important research is
very,
ongoing.
Very awesome.
So I wanted to mention that. Also, one more quick thing. The Air Force Research Laboratory.
Yep.
I got to get the whole name. They also have a podcast called Lab Life. It's on Spotify.
That's cool.
Before we record this episode, they had just recently had their own episode that they talked to people who work at Rome at that facility. I didn't get a chance to listen to it beforehand. I'm sure they don't talk about Woodstock 99, but it's really funny that that's so coincidental that just a few weeks before we recorded this, they were talking to the people from Rome on their podcast. Again, go listen to it. It's public information. I'm sure it's great. Shout out to Lab Life. Go listen to that podcast. I'm sure you'll learn interesting facts. So.
Awesome.
That's my weird rabbit hole.
Wonderful.
I just wanted to mention that because it's so great.
It's we live in a small world.
Yes.
Man.
And also the location is really important for why this concert ended up being such a mess.
Yep. Oh, it's a big one. That's...
Because to avoid, and Ryan, I think I'm going to hand this over to you, but to avoid the mud, they thought, oh, let's have it in a place with a lot of concrete.
Yeah.
That's a bad
so
idea.
We'll here, I'll go ahead and take the reins.
Go ahead.
Here,
go ahead.
Aaron. So for day one, I want to paint you all a visual picture of what Woodstock 99 looks like. And Aaron, you feel free to follow along, okay?
I'm following.
So, you know, when you think Woodstock, what do you think? You think, like, you know, rolling hills and, you know, nice peaceful scenery and, you know, music in the distant background and, you know, lush green grass and, you know, maybe a little bit of mud and fun stuff.
You think of a farm with music.
Yeah. Now, for Woodstock 99, I want you to picture this.
Okay.
It's in the middle of nowhere. It's yep. in, as we've mentioned, it's not at an Air Force base. It's at a sort of former Air Force base reformed into like a business park kind of a thing.
It's at an industrial park.
Right, 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 right.
In a sense.
So they have built, in order to avoid the fence incident of the previous Woodstock, someone's genius idea was to take concrete barriers and reinforce them with chain link fence that were embedded into the concrete. But now that looks like a prison.
Yes.
And remind you, I want to remind everyone at home, this went along the entire length of the entire, like, facility. Once you got into the concert, there was only one way back out. So that's a little too military, though. So what do? They get plywood boards, and they paint nice little pretty hippie scenes on it, and they put them over the top of the chain links, so that way you don't feel like an imprisoned animal while you're sitting at your concert.
Do you know what they call that, by the way?
No.
They call it the peace wall.
I thought I remember that from one of the documentaries. That
yep.
The irony is palpable,
the peace
my
wall.
Friend.
At a former military industrial complex facility, still being used for that purpose,
yep,
by the way.
Yep.
They built a hippie wall around it.
Yes, to make it seem a little better. Okay.
Yes.
But okay, so We've got this big wall. Okay, that's one thing. What's it look like on the inside? What do you think? You probably think, you know, it's really luscious and, you know, well infrastructure. There's like sidewalks and stuff, right? Wrong.
It's just tarmac, basically.
There is a large tarmac where a runway used to be. There's two. That's the main quote unquote road that they used. There are then, I think, three or four hangars. I forget how many. One of them was used as a rave hangar during the evenings. One was used as the emerging artist stage. And then I think the other two were just sort of open for like shelter and stuff like that. That is the only shade in the entire park. And when I say that, I know a lot of people at home are probably thinking, oh, well, that's the only shade other than like the trees and the no,
it's
there was
a former air base. There are no
nothing.
Trees.
Nothing. It is flat. That literally, like, okay, we'll get into this a little bit more later, but if you do see videos of Woodstock 99, a lot of the footage you will see will people just hanging wherever they can find even a sliver of shade. It's a whole thing.
Again, okay. If you've ever been to an airport, and like, but even more fenced in, like, yep. There aren't even trees planted like in between anything.
Nope.
They are not trying to make this look nice. It is a R&D park.
Yep.
It's for tech.
Yep.
You drive in, you drive out. It, and they walled people into basically,
yes,
what is effectively a big runway and parking lot.
Yes.
You
absolutely
think that would get hot after a while?
You would think
they
with
also,
all that tarmac and concrete,
they
wouldn't it?
Also had 3-digit heat for part of this.
Yes. So on the first day, the heat was pretty normal. By the second and third day, it gets intense. But I have stuff written
about
that, so we'll get to it in a second. What I want to talk about now is security. Because security is one of the funniest parts of this entire whole ordeal. Because it's an oxymoron in the greatest way. So when you go into when you get through the big peace wall, you have to go through the security checkpoints like you're going through TSA at an airport. But this TSA isn't looking for things like bombs and things like, you know, stuff like that that could kill you. No, they're looking for sandwiches and bottles of water. Because they don't want you to bring in your own so you can buy stuff that's there. Now, I know what you're thinking. Okay, well, that's probably not all they were looking for. They were probably, like, pulling they were probably, like, snagging drugs and stuff like that along the way. No. Anything like that, alcohol, drugs, all that stuff, that's fine. Go ahead, bring that in there. But water, sandwiches, anything that could actually provide sustenance, no, get that out of there. We don't want people having that.
This couldn't go wrong at all.
I see no way this could possibly go wrong. Okay, so then you get in. You're in, right? You've parked your car on the other side. Which the parking situation is a whole thing that I can't even get into because it's so ridiculous.
Bad parking is a theme of Woodstock.
Yes! But so you finally get inside, right? And so the camp is roughly kind of sort of broken up into groups. You've got the outer edge of the Air Force base, as you can imagine it, kind of skirting along all the various concrete walls that we described earlier. It's sort of described as like the campground, which was basically just, if you can find enough room to put your tent down, that's where your stuff goes. There was nothing formal about it. And mind you, this isn't like the other Woodstocks where it's kind of spread out over like large acreage. No. This is very condensed and tight. So like, if you look at footage, tents are like right next to each other. Like tent pegs are overlapping each other. And like, you can see people's legs like sticking out of one tent, and like kind of clipping another person's tent. They're not even trying to. It's just, that's the way it is.
It's like being packed in like cattle.
Literally.
In like a slaughterhouse. Like, not even like a pasture.
Like sardines. Yeah. So there's that. But then, okay, so let's get into the infrastructure, right? The infrastructure will be one of the greatest downsides of this Woodstock that you'll come to see. And it has to be mentioned because it's just hilarious. All right, so let's get into, like, the infrastructure real quick. Because this is going to be, like, the biggest, like, true downfall of what Woodstock 99. You've got the campgrounds kind of spattered. In and amongst the campground area, quote unquote, you've got these just, like, rows and rows of porta-potties. And, like, picture state fair porta potties or like Renaissance fair porta potties where like the real cheap ones, the like the green ones that don't have any like the formal stuff inside of it, and it's just rows of them. Coincidentally, for a fun little bit of foreshadowing and a little bit of fun guessing, would you like to take a guess where they put the free running water?
Right next to that?
Exactly right next to it. Literally, if you see, it's right next to it.
Oh, man.
Keep that in the back of your pocket for later. That's going to be a fun tool we bring up later. So then there's all that. And then finally, sort of, in kind of, so you can picture both of the stages as being like So you've got the main stage was the east stage, which was obviously on the east side of the tarmac. And then you've got the west stage, which is sort of the side stage, was at the far west end. So if you picture your normal airport runway where it's kind of at that weird sort of almost V shape, both of the stages are at the ends of the V, if that makes sense. And then in between those two Vs, you've got the rave hangar, a bunch of other stuff. And then you've got, I forget what exactly they called it, but they've got all the places where all the merchants are. That's where you're going to get your bottled water, your sandwiches, your merchandise, all the stuff you came to Woodstock 99 for. And yeah, so that's your kind of general layout. As for the day itself, it's kind of, I don't want to use the word picturesque because it definitely wasn't, but it was like, you could see it working out. It was like, okay, this one might actually work. There was, I forget who all performed that day. There was no one really, there's no like notable performances from the first day, really. I think
Korn on the first day?
Like, that was at the like end of the day. That's
the
big
biggest
one.
Name, yeah.
Yeah, that's, other than that, it's ones that I think are like, I want to say like, just random bands. Like, no, I was gonna say Alanis Morissette, but she was the second day. Anyway, it's not important. I'll stop ruminating on it. So one of the things that's really important is, so at 94, MTV was there. 99, MTV is there again. And this time they were there in force. They were there everywhere. You could, from what I see on like both videos and just from like testimonials, you seriously couldn't go more than like 5-10 minutes without seeing somebody behind a camera, either interviewing somebody, talking to the camera, or just shooting B-roll footage.
Oh yeah, this is, I think, part of the reason why it became so infamous is that there is a lot of footage, not just from like MTV, but also in the crowd. Like,
yeah.
Cameras became much more accessible.
And it, like 94 was, there was a pay-per-view event, but it was a much better pay-per-view
yes.
event because they got caught up in all the heat from how bad the 94 pay-per-view was.
Yes.
So with the 99 when it was like full coverage,
they wanted to do it the right way this
yep,
time.
And
it was
if I remember right, if it was like 24/7 hour coverage, like as long as the concert was going and you were tuned into MTV, you could see what was going on.
Yeah, I read somewhere that the only group they didn't show was Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they kind of screwed them. Like, they had an interview with them, too, but I think they were the only band they didn't broadcast, at least initially.
Right. And this is what makes, like you say, what makes Woodstock 99 so incredible is that we just have so much footage of all of this.
Yeah, and it's high quality, too. Like,
it really,
same
really
thing with 94,
is.
It's really high quality, but with, I mean, 99, like, every single thing, you can find, like, every band
yep.
in, like, high quality, like, TV quality footage.
Yeah.
And like different angles and everything. Like, they really, like, the production again was actually pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, they really focused on that. They just didn't focus how they're going to get this herd of people anything that they needed.
Yep, exactly. We can kind of gloss over most of the events of the first day because, again, it's just there's not.
It's the one day it goes decently well.
Yep, it's the one day everything's went well. The one kind of sort of exception, and I really do mean kind of sort of, is Korn. If you watch it, that's where, if you like to be dramatic and you like mm-hmm. to really, you know, where did it all first go wrong? Korn is really kind of the first place to start.
That's such a sad omen when Korn is...
Korn. One thing Korn. Worth noting that I think you will find particularly funny. The lead singer, whose name escapes me right now for Korn, he walked onto stage with a leather kilt on, and I just think that's funny. That's just really funny. That's like peak 90s right there.
Yes, it is. So for the record, for all the Woodstocks, I tried to watch as much of the footage as possible, but I can admit... Even people who were there usually didn't see every performance
yeah.
at just one of the Woodstocks. It's so much to watch. I have not seen literally everything. So the leather thing did escape me. Thank you for telling me. I'm sorry I didn't see the leather kilt.
No, you're okay.
I have tried to watch as much as I can, but they are... It's literally 3 days at just 99, like, let alone everywhere else.
It's 3 days at 99, and then it's three different stages.
Yes.
And that's just during the day, because then at night, there's the electronic scene, which
yes.
is this whole other thing.
Yeah, it's at the rave
so
and all that.
So much stuff going on all at once.
And plus, I wanted to watch the crowd footage, like camcorders
yeah.
that people took, and like, it is so much. I have tried my best to watch all the footage I can. Plus, hey, I had to see 79 and 89 too, and everyone
yep,
else
yep.
like there
I,
is
I think
so
you paid your
watch.
Price there, friend.
I have tried. I have notes, by the way, on artists I can get into later when we
awesome.
Get into it.
Awesome.
I have a little mini thoughts on the ones I could watch, like a lot of released hat
yep.
thoughts on.
So
I will share.
I'm really glad you actually kind of brought up the mm-hmm. crowd just a second ago, because that's what's really the most important focal point of Korn's performance. Is that, if for those of you who don't know Korn, first off, good for you. Second
you're,
off...
You're better off not knowing.
Absolutely. But second off, so they're like a heavy metal, sort of new metal band that...
Yeah,
they
were weird.
They were weird. Their lead singer likes to scat, which is a whole thing.
It's cat singing.
Scat singing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard Steven Tyler?
Yeah.
Imagine that,
yeah,
but
yeah,
bad.
Yeah. So... they were big in the 90s, and if you were in North Dakota in the early 2000s, for some reason, they were still big. Anyway.
yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. So they come on and perform, and I don't believe they were the last band to perform that night. I think they were like the second to last
penultimate
band.
Kind of thing.
Yep. So they come out on stage, and they perform their set, and they do a normal, show.
It's Korn.
Yep, exactly.
If you've seen Korn, you know exactly what you're seeing.
Absolutely. But what you got to keep in mind is that these people have been sitting through what was admittedly not a super hot day compared to the other days, but a very hot day nonetheless.
And remember, urban heat index.
Yes.
The heat off the tarmac is going to, even if it's not like a hot day, like in the atmosphere, down on the ground where the people are, you're going to get roasted still.
And think about it. If you're at the stage, you're in and amongst thousands of people who are literally packed like sardines next to you. And then you throw mosh pits on top of that.
90s mosh pits.
90s mosh pits. Yes. So in a sad way, it's almost notable for how not notable it is, because compared to the other big events that happened of Woodstock 99, it's like, okay, some people were moshed and like some people got kind of hurt because the moshing got a little intense.
Sounds like Woodstock.
It sounds like what you would expect from a metal band playing at Woodstock, right?
Yeah, probably happened during Metallica in 94.
Absolutely.
Too.
Why wouldn't it have? And yeah, that's really it. It's literally like you can watch interviews and it's really fascinating because they'll talk about how like the crowd was like a living organism, and you could see like because of the delay of the sound going through the sound towers, you would see people like headbanging at slightly different times as they got further back.
That's honestly like an amazing and like surreal image.
Like, if you watch the crowd footage for it, it's incredible because you can see it happening in real time.
Oh,
it's like
man.
A human wave as it goes back. It's so cool. That's really, that is the most notable thing to have happened really on the first day, is and just some intense moshing, and it was Korn.
We made it one day. Can we get through two
we
more?
We got day,
can
day
we
one.
Do it?
All right, kids, we're down day one.
I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, Ryan. I don't think they did it.
Okay, so we still have to get through the night here. Okay.
Oh, no, it's
because,
still night.
Because, so Korn performs, and then another band shows up after them, and they were like a really, I wish I could remember the band, because it's kind of hilarious in hindsight, but it was one of those bands that was just a total tone shift,
which
is one of the big things of Woodstock 99, is like,
there were a lot of tone shifts.
It was wild.
I have a very notable one later.
I have a bunch that I wrote down on the second and third days we'll get into, where it's like really prevalent. The first day was like still kind of sort of a little hippie, a little bit.
Yeah.
The second and third day is when it gets to be like, What did you not even listen to the bands before you booked them?
They literally, oh gosh, did you, I think I sent it to you, but I don't know if you got a chance to see it because I sent so much material to you.
Yeah.
Did you see the advertisement for Woodstock 99 that played on TV
yes!
that I sent you? And like just the weird mix of people that
yes!
they feature in that. So again, you can find this on YouTube if you look up Woodstock 99 commercial. I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones, but like it looks like this is just what commercials look like in 1999. Mm-hmm. And it stayed like this into the early 2000s. Like this is
that weirdest.
Like,
aesthetic
yes.
where it's like kind of it looks like it's made on cathode rays.
Yeah, but it's kind of digital too. The ad starts of Dave Matthews Band, and then it goes Dave Matthews, then Metallica.
Yep.
And like Sheryl Crow, like Primus.
Jewel.
It's like what? Yeah.
What?
And then it's got then it switches gears to like Metallica's playing, and then it the
Megadeth,
music switch,
and
yeah,
then there's Wyclef Jean. It's like what is happening?
And it doesn't really seem like they use the Woodstock logo, but they don't really hippie it up.
It's, like that's the biggest thing. Like,
it just seems like any other concert, and they called it Woodstock.
That is the thing that like more than anything is the biggest. Palpable irony of
yes.
Woodstock 99 is that it's Woodstock. It's Woodstock in name. It's all about, it's in peace, love. It's got all the advertising for it. But if you look at who played, where it was set up, the effort they put into it, nothing of it seems hippie-ish. None of
not
it really
too much,
seems like Woodstock.
Really, the most hippie bits of it are the old people that they brought back, because they brought back some of the alumni.
Yeah,
again,
like
they did.
Like later, like on the third day, you get Willie Nelson. You get like a lot of these.
Well, that's
like,
his first time being at Woodstock,
but,
remember.
But very
like
much that hippie
people.
Movement.
Yeah, but
you know.
Santana's back as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
you get Alanis Morissette at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not. She's her first time at one, but at the same time, it's like, I see that. That's
you
kind of a hippie
understand.
Vibe.
Yeah.
It's the modern hippie, you know? You get Jewel, who's like a pop. Who's like a pop rock singer. Yeah, okay, I can kind of see that.
Get it.
And then there's Ice Cube and Insane Clown Posse, and you're like,
what?
What?
And they're playing on the same stage as Dave Matthews and James Brown
is
here.
Yes, no. So we'll get into the...
We have many artist thoughts,
so,
trust me.
So Korn raps, band after that raps, then you have the rave that happens.
Oh, the rave.
Night. And admittedly, again, it's the first day. The first day rave, compared to the second day rave, pretty chill. The way the rave was sort of marketed, I think, is really interesting, is because it was sort of marketed as like an after party of like, hey, you guys just got done rocking out to, you know, all these awesome bands that you love. You don't want to go to sleep at night. Go to the hangar where we've got, you know, all these, all, like, if you look at the list of DJs they had for it, it's hilarious. On the second day, they get like Fatboy Slim.
Oh my gosh, like, Fatboy Slim
the
is
most,
the
like,
most
90s producer you could ever imagine.
Oh my gosh, Fatboy Slim.
And like, it's all names.
I haven't
like
heard that.
That
name in so long. Yes. Oh man.
It's honestly a wonder they didn't get people like Moby and stuff into it. It's hilarious.
I thought he was there, actually.
Was
I'm,
he?
I might
oh,
be
that'd be
wrong.
Hilarious.
I thought Moby was there.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. But by the way, if they didn't use the phrase come to the hangar and hang out, I will
yeah,
be
that would
eternally
be
disappointed. Someone had to, right?
Somebody had to.
Please.
But so the rave hangar is really where that this is when the debauchery, the true like hedonistic level debauchery starts to set in at Woodstock 99. Any report you see, and we're not going to go too in depth because if we do, it's just going to be a lot of talking about the same stuff. But any reports you see or people talking about it, if you walked into the hangar, you would it would be seconds before somebody offered you drug X, Y, or Z. If there was a security guard that I saw who like talked about, he like shone a flashlight against a wall and he just saw people lined up that doing the cardinal sin dance with each other. And that's just on the walls. There's also people doing this on the dance floor. There's like, it's just, it literally is something out of like a fantasy novel of just like pure hedonism and debauchery. Something you read out of like a pulp novel or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and you have to think like people are hot and sweaty
and like
and
a lot
high,
of these people have been awake like for over 24 hours at this point. Cause like you had to drive to the concert. You had to get to the concert. You were there for however many of the shows you were there for. You see Korn play. Now you're going to be dancing your butt off with your friends on your drugs in this rave concert. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. When are you going to rest? And this is the only time it's cool out, mind you. So that's just a whole other thing to keep in the back of your mind.
Also, I did double check my notes. Moby was there.
Was he?
He was, yes.
Cool.
He played the hanger.
That's
so,
super
yes.
cool. That is super, super cool.
Can confirm Moby.
Wonderful. But so yeah, that's basically as much needs to be said about the rave, I feel.
Oh yeah, I think you covered the rave. I feel like it kind of was the, once you saw it, it's like,
Yep, you know exactly what you're in for with
like
a rave.
Most raves, you kind of pick up on what's happening within about 5 seconds.
We'll go a little bit more into detail on the second day's rave, just because there's a few more fun things that happen, but it's...
Let's keep it rolling.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's keep on going.
So let's get into
day two. Dig into the muck and other things.
So let's go back to our mental picture that we've painted for ourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, so yesterday it was a beautiful beautiful industrial park with tarmac and concrete. There were garbages set up for you to throw your garbage everywhere. There's porta potties. There's all this wonderful infrastructure that I'm sure somebody is going to make sure to take care of this infrastructure overnight while everyone's asleep, right? Someone's going to come in and, like, you know, clean the porta potties, maybe switch them out with some new ones, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe throw away the garbage cans.
Any basic semblance of responsibility
anything
whatsoever.
Like, I'm sure somebody would do that, right?
It's just not the people running this event.
No one. So here's what the mental image, this is what people woke up to the very next day.
Oh, no.
So... no one took care of the garbage. That's the first thing we'll address. No, like, there, if you see footage, there are plastic bottles scattered.
It's just treasure.
It literally looks like a landfill. It's insane. This would go on to be one of the big things of Woodstock, but we'll get to that in a second here. I want to keep painting our mental picture. So there's garbage everywhere. Garbage bins are literally overflowing to the point where you physically cannot stuff more in. They are like a mountain of just garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the porta potties.
Oh no, this is bad.
This is really bad. So the porta potties,
oh, hit me with it.
They did their best to like make sure to plan ahead. Given how the last two Woodstocks went that they tried to plan ahead with, how well do you think they did in planning
not
ahead
at
with
all.
Them? Not at all. They didn't have anywhere near enough and they didn't have enough storage. So by the beginning of the second day, the porta potties were leaking.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
How was Mudstock better planned than this?
It's funny you ask that question because one of the clandestine features of Woodstock 99 too, and you see a lot of footage, is the mud. There was no mud at Woodstock 99.
Mm-mm.
Do you remember how I said on the first day that they set a lot of the free water stations
were next
directly
to the
porta potties?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember how I said that? guess what happened to the water faucets?
They all got mixed with poo.
They got mixed with poo because all the poo is seeping into the water, which in turn seeps into the pipe, which then causes the water to come out. And so here's where it gets real bad, though. So it becomes a whirlpool effect where the poo seeps out of the porta potty into the ground. It seeps into the pipe. It gets into the water. The water then goes out. People see that it's tainted water. It's not hard to tell that the water went from clear to not clear.
Yes.
They pour it open. People see that this is clearly contaminated water. People are getting upset.
Yes.
Guess what people do when they're upset that the water is contaminated in a prison base, essentially?
They get pretty mad.
They get really mad. So they start breaking the water faucets. And because this water is pressurized, you've now broken the valve off.
Mm-hmm.
So water is just rushing
Screaming.
Out of these pipes now.
Oh.
And guess where the water is pointed at?
Everywhere, basically.
Everywhere, but especially at the porta potties. So all the water and all the poop are just mixing together.
Oh, it's literally a toilet.
It literally, and you see, like, if you watch video of the second day, it's not hard to find videos of this. You can look at any MTV footage.
This
is
really
rough.
You will
see people just diving into this poop because they think it's mud stuff.
Yes, they think it's
part of the spirit. But there's no mud.
It's poo.
It's poop. It's poo, Aaron.
It's poo. It's bad. I should have maybe just said this at the beginning of this segment. There is a brief little just disclaimer I wanted to give everyone about watching Woodstock 99 footage is that people do get a little violent. It's nothing too, like, outrageously terrible.
No.
There's a little violence.
It's
there's
what you would expect from a metal show.
Yes, there's a little bit of rolling around in poo. There's some topless people.
Oh,
a
lot of topless people.
It's like, just be careful where you watch this. I just wanted to give that brief disclaimer that maybe not in public.
Yes,
just
definitely
say.
Definitely don't sit and watch with your parents.
Because
you're going to see some questionable
the other
stuff.
Woodstocks, you might be able to get away with it. Again, might be some topless people, give or take. It kind of depends on the footage. But, like, especially 99, like, and it's the kind of thing, like, where you think, like, oh, MTV would try to, like, not show that.
No,
but
it was on full display.
They just, like, they focus on it. It's like,
and,
what the heck?
And I know why this is. So, MTV... Literally, this is like a big seminal thing. And this is something that I'll get into. I can actually use this to transition here.
Segue away.
So MTV in the early 90s was like the thing for young people. But then in the late 90s,
it was starting to fade.
It started to fade because they had a change of management. It got corporatized. And suddenly it started to become what we know MTV is now, where it's mostly just reality TV show. It's not really what MTV was.
Mm-hmm.
99, Woodstock 99, that was front and center because that stuff had just started happening. So a lot of people did not like or trust the MTV people. So what you get is you have this weird, like, social class that begins to develop between the people who are attending the concert and the people who are reporting the concert. And it gets to the point where, remember how I mentioned all the garbage that was around? People would chuck the garbage. Literally just, like, if you see footage of, like, people reporting live at the main stage, you will see them, like, with their back to the crowd, and they will just be belting them with this all the garbage they can, like, manage to muster. They started doing that, and they didn't just do that with the journalists. They did that to anyone that was perceived as, like, above.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even the performers, you know, with Mudstock, where it was like some people were really cool with getting mud thrown at them, some people were really pissy. Exactly the same thing happened here, only instead of mud, it's garbage. Like, Wycliffe Jean, he was one of the, I think, the second or third person to perform on the second day. And he did a cover of Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner. And he was encouraging people to chuck stuff on the stage. Kid Rock, I think, was the second, or was either immediately before or immediately after him. Again, weird choice of lineup.
Mm-hmm.
He also encouraged people to throw stuff on the stage. But then you get a lot of ones who are like, you know, actively like, this is disgusting. Don't do this. So that's a whole thing, right?
And then you're getting mixed messages because the crowd, it's like, oh, don't do this. Oh, do that. And then it's like...
And it's you're trying to communicate this to however many thousands of people. Like,
they're rotating in and out. And like, how can you control that? Like, it's already they're losing control, but then you're sending mixed messages. And also, the funny thing is rumors spread through the crowd.
Yes,
and it becomes, oh my gosh, which we'll get...
so many rumors.
The
that
third
spread.
Day has, I think, the most famous rumors.
The biggest rumor,
stuff,
which is really hilarious. Again, foreshadowing, kids. So... you've got all this trash going on. And this is something that I will admit I'm pulling from the HBO documentary. Go watch that if you haven't. Very, very good. But there's a moment that I think is really important. That's really important that I think I have to talk about. Woodstock 99 had an official photographer. It was the same photographer they had for 94 and for 69.
Really? Same guy?
Same girl. Yep. She's a really big deal.
Girl.
She
Oh, wait, I've heard about her. Yes, you're right. I don't remember her name, but I know
she was up in like the control tower or something like that.
which they were using as, like, basically to coordinate all the different things. And she looks down and she sees all this garbage. And you know what her brilliant idea to fix this is?
I can't wait to hear this.
So it's not to get security involved. It's not to, like, get the staff involved. No. What does this boomer do? What is this?
Tell me. I'm waiting.
She drives around the entire, like, complex on a four-wheeler and is handing out garbage bags to concert attendees. It's like, pick up after yourself. Make sure to pick up your trash. Come on, it's up to us to make sure we keep this great.
Yes.
And then in the documentary, she talks about how, like, oh, the kids were so entitled. They didn't want to help, and they're just, like, throwing stuff away. And I'm like, lady, these kids paid $150 in 1990s money, which I did the conversion, is about $250 in today's money.
Not cheap.
And you're surprised that they're not wanting to
pick up trash
at a concert that's supposed to be about peace and love.
Now, I did want to mention this, because it's something I forgot to mention in the last episode, because, well, little thing I want to mention, her attitude is not completely strange or alien.
No.
Because for the cleanup of the original Woodstock Festival, it was a big volunteer force of mostly concert attendees who stayed and cleaned it up.
Yes.
And in fact, actually, a few years back, there was actually an archaeological dig at the Woodstock site trying to find things people had left, and they found surprisingly little because the cleanup was so good.
That's cool.
So, like, it's interesting that, like, okay, her attitude's probably coming from that.
Yes.
But she's not recognizing that it's completely changed times and the circumstances completely different.
That's one of the biggest issues. Yes, exactly. And that's
boomers
really,
don't
again,
get it.
It's one of the biggest touchstones of Woodstock 99 that you've really touched there. Is this? It's a difference in a complete generational shift is happen, and so
you have Gen X and younger millennials coming
in here.
They're completely,
like,
different.
One of the biggest things that sticks out to me is, like, I mentioned Wyclef Jean did a rendition of Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner, which is an iconic performance. Most of the people who were attending had no idea what the heck he was doing. They thought he was just doing a really weird version of the song. Like, that's how, like, big of a generational difference we're talking here. These people, they know the name Woodstock, and they know the peace and love.
But they've heard the myth-making about it.
Yes, they don't know the reality of it, and they just know what it's supposed to be, and that's not what they're getting.
Really funny, because at both 94 Red Hot Chili Peppers, they all dressed up like Hendrix during their set, and people went nuts because they got it, but the shift has happened a bit more. But during James Brown's performance, which I watched all the way through, he has one of his guitarists do a tribute to Jimi Hendrix as well, and people go nuts for it.
Yeah.
And it's doing the national anthem, but they say it's Hendrix, and I wonder, does that affect it
at
all?
It's definitely a thing that affects it, because, like, Wyclef Jean does not mention it. And, like,
that might be what kind of doomed him there, is that they might have known Hendrix, but they might not have known about that specific moment.
Exactly. There's just so many touchstones that have been lost as the generation has changed.
Because, you know, 30 years later now, actually, for this one, that changes a lot, shockingly. 30 years is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And people, it's hard to recognize that, I guess, if you've just been around that long, right?
Yes, exactly. The next thing we have to talk about, and this is something that is just so funny to me.
Let's hear it. You're on a roll, Ryan. Keep going.
This is one of the things I was most excited to talk about.
Yes, let's hear it.
So it's on the second day that the lack of security and accountability really starts to show. One of the big things that happened is a lot of security guards just showed up, collected a paycheck, took their shirt off, and then just enjoyed the concert.
Yep.
A lot of them did that.
Did you hear about them? Some people handed out their security shirts to random people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, here, you want a security shirt? You can be a security guard. Yep. So you got guys
who they got each security guard get given two shirts. So you had a spare one that you could just give to someone or sell if you had a certain mindset.
Yeah. And you just imagine some random drunk 90s guy, like, well, like, oh, I'm insecure.
Like, that's the thing, is, like, this is, when you think security nowadays, you know, you kind of think of bigger, tougher men who were hired out from, like, security firms or something.
Yeah, professionals.
Like, this was not that. These were young 20-somethings that were hired from the various local communities, most of them drug doers, a lot of them alcoholics.
So it's like the Hells Angels at Altamont.
It really is, except just less gang violence.
Just more stupidity, probably.
A lot more stupidity. Yeah, you're dealing with college students instead of hardened criminals.
Yeah, they're definitely dumber.
Yeah, definitely. So, like I say, lack of security, lack of accountability. The biggest way, though, you can see the lack of accountability comes from the water tents. So, I mentioned that there were free, like, water faucets you could use.
Mm-hmm.
There were also places you could buy water bottles. From what I gather, from what research I could do, it seemed that the way they kind of assigned people to their jobs was very just according to age and according to body. If you were a big guy who was slightly older, you were security. If you were a bigger girl, you were security. If you were maybe a smaller guy or smaller girl, you worked merchandising. All the teenagers got given the water tents.
Oh, no.
You see where this is going
those
already.
Poor kids.
Wait for it. Not those poor kids. These poor kids.
Oh, they're scummy teenagers. Oh,
yes.
Great.
So here's what happened, right?
Smart
so the first day, there was some actual like accountability. There were actually like people kind of making sure that the kids are doing their job. But for reasons we'll get into in a second here, on the second day, a lot of the security and the management was focused on other things. We'll get there in a minute. But so they was focused on other things. So these teenage boys with no accountability in the 1990s, before debit cards are a thing, or before debit cards are like widely popular,
yes,
in like the way they are
it's
now.
It's all cash.
Yes, it was still all cash. Now, the water price was supposedly $1 a bottle from day one to the very end. And if you watch any of the documentaries, when they ask either Michael Lang or the other guy who helped set it up, John Scher is his name, who was like, I think he was a little bit involved in 94, if I remember right.
It was kind of like a later addition.
Yeah, and he was the big reason 99 happened, is he was a lot of the money and stuff like that. Whenever they get asked about the water the price gouging, every time they are staunchly like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, gosh.
No, there was no water gouging. Like, it didn't happen. As far as I'm aware, it was stayed a dollar, and it was a dollar the whole time. And the thing is like, you just be like, okay, you're lying, no, but when you watch it, there is like a little hint of truth. At least when I watched it, I felt there was like a little hint of truth coming out of it. And I was really curious. And so I did a deep dive, like really deep dive on this. And I found out that so what happened was, is you got these teenagers who figure out that they're not being watched anymore. It only costs a dollar to get a bottle of water. But these are businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
You only have so much water, and
the supply is here. The demand
is
rising
up. So we're just going to go ahead and charge people more. So it starts being $2 a bottle, then $4 a bottle. By the end of the show, by the last day, by the third day, give me a guess how much a bottle of water costs.
Probably like 10 to 15 or something.
$12.
$12.
You were really close.
$12.
$12 for a bottle of water.
1999.
Yes. So that's what these kids would do. They would upcharge the price. They would take the $1 that they needed to put in the till, put it in the till, and the rest they would share amongst themselves.
Of course they would.
Like what the hell?
No one thought to check on that.
No. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm sure if Woodstock 99 had gone perfectly, people probably would have been checking on
yes.
it.
Yes.
But for reasons we're about to get into.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So let me just look at my notes here real quick.
Go ahead, take a breather. I mean, gosh, this is like the most insane. Well, this is not the most insane festival ever, but
no,
it's up there.
It's really up there.
The infamy also really follows it too. It's that they shouldn't have called it Night Woodstock.
So going along with the water, the other thing that we have to mention, we've made some allusions to it at this point, is the heat.
The heat.
So
not canned heat. They weren't here. Actually,
they weren't there. They didn't want to. They saw this disaster coming. but so the heat was unbearable starting the second day. Literally, I was looking it up because I was curious. Before noon, the thermostat was at 90 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
By noon, it was over 100, not including humidity. And that's not including the heat index. And that's not including the fact that they're standing on burning hot tar.
And it's the dead of summer. It's August.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a dry heat. And again, the water's mostly broken. So, and you're standing, in, like, if you're in the campground, there's no shade anywhere. Anywhere. You are stuck in the sun all day. And if you go to one of the stages, you're packed like sardines among thousands of other people who are all moving and bumping. By the end of the second day, I want you to give me a guess. How many people, by the end of the second day alone, had to go to the medical tent because of heat stroke?
Oh, gosh. Wasn't it like 1,000 people or something?
You're actually a little over.
A little
by
over?
By the end of the second day, over 700 people.
Okay.
700 people 700. Had heat stroke.
That's an entire hospital of
yes,
people.
Yes, and like the thing is it's not even just like dehydration. No. This is like passed out, brain no longer work. We need to submerge this person in ice and get their body temperature cooled back
down. This is
down.
A serious medical problem going on here of 700
yes.
people. Not counting everyone who's also probably getting bruised
and
scratched
getting
and
cut
robbed
and injured and getting
and rolling in poo.
Yes.
And like all the like people dying of sepsis. Like
literally anytime you see people talk about the medical tents at Woodstock 99, they talk about it like it's one of two things. It's either a refugee camp or a military hospital. So it's either like a refugee camp or a military hospital.
Both of which aren't fun places,
no,
typically.
No, not a place you want to have at a concert.
Mm-mm.
Oh, my God.
Oh, gosh.
So, we've gotten all of that fun stuff out of the way. halfway through the day, the garbage got to be such a problem that people, as an act of protest, actively started taking the garbage cans and would just flip them upside down and then would form ad hoc drum circles.
I saw some of that in the footage.
Which is hilarious.
The stuff these people do with, like, speakers and all the trash cans and just the trash itself and the porta potties and the fountains, and
it's
a shocking amount of creativity.
It really is. And like, it's nothing compared to what happens on the third day is the funniest part.
Are we ready to jump into the third day?
Not even close.
Oh gosh, how much more do we have for the second day?
Not much. Okay. I just want to get a couple big things here that are like, I want to talk. So the first thing I want to address is how wild, we've talked about it a bit, but how wild the lineup was.
Yes, let's hear the lineup.
So in the first half on the main stage, you had bands like Wyclef Jean, who's kind of like reggae-ish, Kid Rock, a little more rocky, Counting Crows, like contemporary.
Oh, I forgot they were there.
Yeah, very like kind of hippie-ish bands, right?
Yeah, was Creed on the second day or was it third day?
I think Creed was the third day.
Creed, okay, third day, okay.
But then the last three bands that played,
Oh, I'm getting ready for it.
In a row.
Oh, let's hear it.
Limp Bizkit, Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, yep.
And Metallica to round the night off.
Oh, Metallica's the ender. Oh,
very hippie music, right? Meanwhile, you want to know what's going on over the second stage?
Yes.
You've got bands like Guster, alternative rock. You've got Bruce Hornsby Group, very kind of contemporary rock. You've got, let's see here real quick, Everclear, Collective Soul, Los Lobos. Not exactly all hippie, but fairly, like, something you would expect.
Yeah, softer.
You would expect that at Woodstock 99, you know? So now that we've mentioned it, we have to get into this is the part that you can't skip over with Woodstock.
Oh, we got it. We got to get into it. The Durst Down?
The Durst Down.
That's what I call it.
That is what I call it now, too. So, without a doubt, the Limp Bizkit performance is, number one, a legendary performance.
It is.
Number two, this is the point where everyone, the people who made Woodstock, the people who performed at Woodstock, the people who reported on Woodstock, all of them agree this was the point where it went too far. This was when Woodstock 99 died. This is what caused everything to happen after.
This is when they've reached a point of no return where it's just going to become a chaos, basically.
This is when the genie has been taken out of the proverbial bottle.
A lot of people, again, in the media, you're saying this.
Yes.
We can talk about that, too, because I think there's a bit of a narrative here.
I'm also going to. So we got to ask ourselves, what happened, Aaron?
Well, it was a poorly planned event where things started going wrong?
Right. Yes, correct. So if you were to ask Mr. Lang and Mr. Cher, the men who put on the show, during his set, Mr. Durst egged the crowd on, eventually whipping them into a frenzy of new metal mania.
New metal? That should be an album.
That really should. I was really proud of that when I came up with that. Thank you.
Dude, that should have been Limp Bizkit. Like, we just got to get that to Fred Durst
right
now. We do.
He's touring again.
Oh, gosh.
People began to hyper-aggressively mosh, and there were reports of fights breaking out, like cavemen fighting over meat. This culminated with the iconic song, truly a testament of our time, Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit. And oh boy,
did they break
would
stuff
be broken. So the song starts in its normal way. If you've ever heard the song, you know exactly how it starts.
Mean riff. Very gnarly.
Very, very cool. Very, very good. Very,
hooks
you know, stompy.
Right in.
Oh, yeah. Exactly what you want it to be. People are, you know, they're moshing. They're fighting. They're doing all the things that you would expect for a Fred Durst Limp Bizkit performance.
And real quick, before we go, because I know, just real, hold the thought.
Yep.
Hold it right
yep,
there, because
yep.
I want to mention that Fred Durst has the most 90s tough guy outfit.
Yes.
He's got the backwards New York Yankees.
He looks like Gangster Mario.
He does, and he's got the little shorts.
Yep.
And he's got the shirt. And then his one guitar player, Wes or whatever his name is.
Whatever his name is.
And then he's got the face paint and the black eye contact.
Yes.
So it looks like he's possessed and he's just wearing the little shorts. And they do their little gyrate dance because it's Limp Bizkit. And oh my gosh, I don't know if this band is great or terrible, but they're so
both.
So themselves.
Yes.
They are so themselves. And you have to at least respect that they are nothing but themselves.
Yes.
And they all look like
dorks.
They look like violent dorks. And also their bass player's in the corner and they don't really do anything of him, but he's bald and he hangs out in the corner.
Yep, he's there.
And it's like, he sure does play bass.
Oh, and Vernon Troyer introduced Limp Bizkit.
Oh, right, yeah, because of course.
Why wouldn't he?
Why what?
So the song plays.
Yes.
He gets to the, if you've heard the song, it's the part where it, the one part you can actually hear the bass.
Yes.
And
that's kind of where it mellows for a second before the drop.
This is when Mr. Durst took the time to address the crowd. And yes. I quote, "Time to reach deep down inside and take all that negative energy, and let that beep out of your beeping system. You got girl problems. You got boy problems. You got parent problems. You got boss problems. You got job problems. You got a problem with me. You got a problem with yourself. It's time to take all that negative energy and put it the beep out."
And then they did.
And they did, because it's at that point then, again, if you've heard the song, it gets into the, "I got a chainsaw, yeah. I'll skin your beep, raw." Yeah,
and it's so terrible and amazing.
To, yes, and then it gets, "And if my D keeps going this way, I just might break your beeping face tonight." And then it goes, "Give me something to break." And like, it gets
by the way, the only
hard.
Reason we're censoring this is because the websites we post this on will get mad. Otherwise, we would not censor
absolutely.
This. But again, you can see
definitely
this.
Go
check
watch.
It out online.
Definitely watch Limp Bizkit's performance. It's incredible.
Yes, again, it's not something I would normally care about. It's just so I can keep this episode
just so
up,
we can actually pretend to be professional.
Yes.
But so
that's a good way to put it.
It's when he gets into the and my beeping face tonight, yes. And it hits
and the drop
people
comes.
Go
nuts.
Feral. Literally, if you watch the
it's
it
so
is
great.
Insane
it's
because
so terrible and great.
Okay, I'm just gonna read verbatim what I wrote here.
Let's
from
hear
my notes.
Go right ahead.
"At which point the guitar breaks down and people went absolutely feral. They began tearing plywood off the surrounding walls and small buildings near the concert stage. People began crowd surfing on these plywood boards. They then, about two-thirds, this went on for about two-thirds of the song, until people realized that the sound tower, which is a very iconic piece of Woodstock 99, if you see photos, it's this big T-looking structure, dead set, like, so if you've got the stage, literally, like, I don't know how many yards in
it's
front of it.
It's not too far, like, it looms
yep,
in the background.
It's this big loom, it's like Sauron's tower, it's just standing there.
And it's got, like, it looks kind of like ears or like corn stalks
yes.
coming off, but just how there's any speakers around the thing.
Yes, and that's where all the sound technicians are who are like trying to make everything work and get it to sound right. Well, it started with probably just a few people, but then it very quickly, like zombies, like yes. everyone had hive mind.
It does look like a zombie movie.
Because they realized the sound tower was also made, and I don't know why they thought this was a good idea, of plywood. They made an entire sound tower out of basically metal pipes and plywood. And this thing is like stories tall.
It's at least 50 feet for
like,
sure,
it's
right?
It's huge. And they were like, yeah, that's probably good enough. That'll be secure. Nothing bad could happen.
I'd be worried about it falling apart.
So that's exactly what happens is that people notice this tower and like a zombie movie just flood around it. And they're, with bare hands, their feet, whatever they can, they're just beating it, kicking it, ripping this thing apart. It got so... Oh, I forgot to mention this. Would you like to guess what the nickname for the sound tower was?
I don't know. What is it?
It's the Alamo.
The Alamo?
It was named the Alamo, and they
Why?
Named it the Alamo before any of this happened.
Oh,
there was
the banner
on the Alamo? Literally written on the front of the tower that called it the Alamo.
They were asking for trouble.
They were asking for this.
You don't do that.
You can't write this stuff.
No, don't do that.
But then, so the structure started to like violently shake, like,
yes.
Oh, we need to bail.
Because
so
it's
going
to fall.
So then one of the few instances I could find of the entire like festival of security actually doing their job, they had to form basically an ad hoc phalanx. Dive into the crowd of people, pushing them out of their way as they're like beating and kicking people to get to the tower. They then have to rescue people down, get them back to like another tower, like way over to the other side. Again, it's like a zombie movie.
It really is.
Because like people describe it as like you went into the crowd and like for a split second you could kind of still see the stage, and then as you took like two steps forward, the crowd just right around you, and suddenly you are just surrounded.
You're in the sea of humanity.
And if you get knocked out of the phalanx, you're on your own.
Yes. There was not a lot of sympathy at this. People
no,
were tired.
People were tired and hot and exhausted.
Also, there's something about the late 90s, maybe you can remember this, or like the early 2000s, where people just wanted to get into fights randomly.
Yes, it was a really big thing. Even in the like 2000s, it was a thing.
People wanted violence. I don't know what it was about America where we just craved violence
it
for some reason
thing.
For a few
it
years
was
there. It was really strange. Very weird thing.
Absolutely. So that's like kind of the highlight of Mr. Biscuit's performance.
But it's not the end.
It's not the end.
It's not the end, no.
Because what happens
next, the ending is amazing.
It's the ending that is the best part of this, and it's part of my thesis.
Go on, let's hear it.
So here's the thing. He's whipped the crowd into this major frenzy. But then he starts to mellow the crowd out with his next song, Nookie. He says in the middle of the song, and I quote, "We've already let all the negative energy out. It's time to reach down and bring that positive energy to this beep beep. It's time to let yourself go right now, because there are no beep beep rules out there."
Tech of those beep beep rules.
Now, as this song is going on, Nookie was at his time his biggest song, even bigger than
Which is so weird to think about.
Yes, really weird. People still did mosh.
Of course.
It's why wouldn't they be? But the destruction, like, stopped. The people stopped ripping plywoods off stuff. They kind of stopped attacking the tower mostly. People just went back to focusing on Biscuit for the most part.
He had him in the palm of his hand this whole show. It's nuts.
This is why it's such a legendary performance. And then that leads to the next part, which is hands down the most
legendary.
This
is the final
song,
right?
Yes. This is
the best. This is, of all the Woodstocks, I am not kidding you, this is the one thing I have watched the most, because it is amazing.
This is the one thing that if I could go back in time and see, I would. Absolutely.
Yes. Also, I love how I didn't know they even did this song until I discovered it this show, and so it was euphoric to discover this.
For those of you that don't know, Limp Bizkit has a cover of the song Faith.
By George Michael.
Yes, and at the time, it was one of like their bigger songs. It wasn't their biggest, but it was one of the ones that people were like, wow, they covered this song and did a good job. Very metal, very intense, very good.
Very interesting cover.
As he notices that there's plywood's going all around and people are surfing, he's like, that's really cool.
Because people are surfing on it and all, but they're standing and then people are crowd slowly holding up the platform.
And he's like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so he literally points to people in the crowd. He's like, you start bringing that over here. Yeah. I want to get on that. Meanwhile, you can see security having like a heart attack. Like, he said what? No. But Durst is like,
he's set.
He has like, it's like a battlefield surgeon. He's just in the zone. This is going to happen. So the plywood gets to the front of the stage. People in the crowd are holding it. He walks down. He gets onto this plywood. Security is holding on to the back of his shirt to make sure he doesn't fall as he performs. But if you watch the performance, it is legendary, because the man is, you think he's like, okay, he's going to like stand on this plywood stage, kind of like an extension, and he's just going to kind of do his thing.
Yes.
No.
We got to make sure we get the timeline this right.
Yes.
Correct? Because what he's doing is he's hanging out on the side of the board as he starts singing. He's like, oh, the ladies, like, let's do something for the ladies. And then they get a huge cheer for the crowd. Then he starts singing Faith by George Michael. And the crowd goes insane. These 1999 tough guys and whatever women were at the time, I don't know what the word is, but like they all go nuts for Limp Bizkit singing Faith by George Michael.
Yes.
And then he gets on.
Yes. And then he gets on the plywood.
Gets on the board.
And he, at first, he just starts with kind of, you know, his normal like stomp and routine that he is. But by the end, this man is jumping up and down on this plywood. Like, and we're not just talking like little leaps. No, he is clearing the plywood with like a solid foot between his legs.
Hammering, and the people are holding up like, keep going, Fred.
Like, you can see security like desperately trying.
And they can't get him. Fred's
like,
already in the crowd.
I can't.
You can't beat Fred Durst.
You cannot.
You cannot beat Mr. Bizkit. Because think about it. Also, this is how the song goes, right? Is he sings the opening verse like light and kind of happy.
And then when it drops,
he goes,
and that's when he's really doing the
and
stomping.
He's going down. And everyone is having the time of their lives. And it's so much fun.
It's really gosh. Like this, if you see footage, it's impossible to blame people for being so absorbed.
No, it's
so
like this
good.
Is what he's hired to do anyways, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's after that legendary song, you know what happened next? They pulled the plug on him. The only artist who got the plug pulled on them the entire show was Fred Durst on Saturday. And he wasn't even the final act.
Oh, gosh. Poor Fred Durst got done dirty.
Yes. So here's the big question we have to ask ourselves, Aaron, before we can move on.
Let's take on the narrative that Fred Durst was the cause of Woodstock 99, because I think it's crap.
I also do.
It's complete crap.
Here's my two cents on it, right?
Let's hear it.
Did he help the situation?
Probably not.
Probably not, no. But was he the reason it happened? Let's review the facts here. Think about it from your common man's POV. It's literally 100 degrees. Plus, you're walled in. It's humid.
It's been 2 days.
It's been 2 days. You're exhausted. You're tired. There's mud and poop everywhere. You probably have lost sight of your friends because it's the 90s and you don't have a cell phone to keep track
of them. Yeah, some people did, but not that many.
Not that many.
You're and being now, gouged on water.
You're getting gouged on water. You're getting gouged on food. You're getting gouged on everything. There's
MTV's everywhere around you.
You're getting viewed like it's 1984. And suddenly you've just been given this artist who stands in front of you and says, hey, all that negative energy, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's embrace that. Let's go. So, did it help? Probably not. However, I would like to stipulate this. The next two bands that came on were Rage Against the Machine and Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're what you would, what you, Aaron, would describe as peaceful, easygoing bands?
No.
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 So if,
it's not the Eagles.
No. So if Fred Durst hadn't have performed, it stands to reason that it probably would have happened at either Rage or Metallica.
And it's not like they were completely like clean, non-rowdy shows. Like both of them did like some stuff.
Rage Against the Machine literally ended their set by playing Killing in the Name and burning the American flag.
And it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah. And
also, that's the funny thing about that. Nowhere near as subversive as singing Faith by George Michael on
nowhere
the platform.
Near, no.
It is a pales in comparison to what Mr. Biscuit
so
did.
So really, all you can, what really Limp Bizkit did was he drew the short straw when you think about it. And honestly, my opinion on it, my take is that he was actually in a way kind of a savior because it's like a pressure release valve.
Yes.
If people wouldn't have released that pressure, it was only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
People needed to let all that energy out.
And
like
he calls
said.
Them down the song after.
Literally, so he gets them right back into their hands. But he knew he did what Fred Durst does best.
That's what he's hired to do. Fred Durst.
You hired Fred Durst to put on a Limp Bizkit show, and then you're mad when he does a good job doing it.
Yeah, like, shouldn't the people promoting this show and MTV take a little more responsibility in the fact that they had a plywood 1984 wall
that was
covered in
together
nonsense,
cheap,
which people took apart, by the way. I don't know if you ever mentioned that, but it, like, hand by hand, they tore that whole thing to pieces.
That gets down on the third day. I have that written down.
And like, just the whole situation shouldn't have happened like it was, so that this couldn't have happened. You can't blame Fred Durst for being himself.
Yes,
and he handles it pretty well, all things considered.
He did a great job.
Like, he and really, like, I mean, as much as we talk about this being bad, like, I don't know if anyone really got hurt or anything, like, majorly.
But it's again, it's
like
people got
taking
injured.
Plywood off a wall, or like not feeding them for 2 days.
Yeah. Like, yes, people got injured moshing. That's what happens when you mosh.
This is what you should expect. You have mosh pits. This is what you do.
That's
what
happens.
Yes,
literally,
you need to be prepared for that circumstance.
And he literally addressed that at the beginning of the set and was like, "Hey, if somebody falls down, you pick them up."
Yes,
that's the first
he's
rule of
being
a mosh.
Shockingly responsible.
Exactly.
Here.
He's being responsible, but at the same time, he's also doing his job.
He's letting people have some fun, and then when it gets a little too ready, he calms
them
down. And then he does his own thing where he's like, I'm gonna get out there and I'm gonna be with the people, and they love him for it.
And they eat it out of his hand. And like, you watch him afterwards, and like, they're immediately journalists are like bombarding him with like, hey, how did you feel about people getting injured? What did you think about people doing this?
They set that up. He got set up.
And literally his answer is, I think, the best answer you could give in that situation. He's just like, I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, he can't see everything. Like, he sees the plywood, but that's just plywood.
All he sees are people jumping up and down and moving around. Faceless. What was he gonna do?
Yeah, there's nothing. He's on stage with all the lights and everything.
Exactly. What's
and
he
like,
gonna do? Point out to that guy way over there.
No.
Go, hey, you stop doing that behavior.
That's why you have security and all this other stuff at a festival. It's not
exactly
his job to like if he saw someone getting stabbed, that would be different. Like,
yes,
he would probably say something, but nothing like that happens.
No.
Like, it's completely different.
What was he supposed to do?
They could have sent Garth Brooks out on that stage, and he probably would have
probably
been just as set up, honestly.
That's exactly my opinion, is literally,
like it's just
anyone
so unfair.
Could have taken the stage at that point, because at that point, it's like 4 o'clock in the day. Like, this is when people are going to be the most, like,
yeah, and
you
the sun
I mean?
Is just setting as he's getting up there,
so
and
it's
everything.
Like kind of the peak
it's kind
of the heat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everyone's kind of coming down a little bit. Like,
absolutely.
What did you expect to happen? You caged in a bunch of people. Like, there's a reason this didn't happen at the other two Woodstocks. Like, for as lucky as they got, they weren't seemingly trying to make a powder keg explode.
Exactly.
They got lucky in that it didn't, but they tried to. They again, in 94, it's like, okay, let's make it free. Let's try to keep everyone as safe as possible. Let's bring in more supplies. Or at 69, let's have the National Guard bring it in.
Yeah.
Like, they did everything they could. It just seems so strange that at 99, they set themselves up for the failure.
Really did.
And
really did.
People want to blame Fred Durst for it. And it's like, he's like
everyone
the,
wants
the,
a Fred,
the
what's
end of the chain here.
Yeah.
Like, you can't blame him for anything else.
No.
And it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. By the way, do you know what date Insane Clown Posse was on? Was
they were on the first day.
They were first day.
First day.
Okay, yeah, well, here's my thing. Do you know much about their performance? I watched it.
Please tell me everything.
Okay. So here's Insane Clown Posse's thing that they do, because I thought this would have caused a riot. Honestly, if they had done day two or three, it probably would have been a riot.
Yeah.
So Insane Clown Posse, they're Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J.
Yep.
God
yep.
bless them. Great
Love
people.
Them.
Great
magnets.
People.
How do they work?
How do magnets work? But great people. But they got their full. They are in the face paint. If you've seen Insane Clown Posse, you've seen every show.
You know what they're about.
Yeah. But they have a. I don't know if it's quite an altar or like a. It's kind of like a font or like a basin sort of thing they got set up on stage. You know, how much do you know about ISP?
I know ICP. Bits about their lore.
Okay, so
like,
there's
I know
Juggalos, there's Faygo, which is the drink, which is a soda that's
from pop, Detroit.
Out of Detroit, and they love it. So they have a demon fountain altar thingy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what's going on there. Like, I don't know if it's symbolic or just they thought it looked cool and they played Doom once. I don't know. Especially when you learn about their actual personalities and beliefs. That's really odd. But anyways, we can maybe do a Juggalo episode. I have no idea.
Oh,
but anyways,
don't threaten me
they have
time.
A big, like, little altar font thing. It looks like a... Like, you've been to, like, a gas station where they have, like, the big tub of, like, pop?
Yeah.
Open, like, not in the fridge, but, like, open tub.
Just
they have
there.
That of Faygo.
Oh, my God.
And... It's this weird demon thing. It's like spikes on it and crap. Looks like something you see like a Guar show.
Oh
it's,
my God,
it's
yes.
really weird. And they are in their face paint. I think it's Shaggy comes out dressed as Superman at the start and then
Heck
he rips it off. And like throughout the whole show, it is nothing but 2 liters of Faygo. They are taking it out of this and dumping on themselves, the crowd, their other members, the whole show.
Oh my God.
They brought it up to last like an hour and a half long set.
Oh my God.
And they are covered, like the face paint starts to run a little bit. They are covering this stuff. And I think maybe at the halfway point, they have the brilliant idea of like, hey, we heard y'all got ripped off with the ticket prices. So we're gonna give you a refund. And everyone's like, huh? And they then bring out, I think it's either soccer balls or basketballs or dodgeballs or something. They have taped. They said, yeah, you got charged $100. They tape $100 bills and they kick them into the crowd.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they do this. And I am like,
if this would have happened on the second or third day, it would have been a riot.
And I'm like, you don't think that was more irresponsible? I get, like, this comes up. The thing about Insane Clown Posse is that this is out of the goodness of their hearts.
Right.
Or their own stupidity, one of the
exactly.
two. Because the thing is, I rarely think they're ever trying to hurt anyone.
No.
They're either just
trying to be provocative.
They're either, trying to be provocative, too dumb to know what they're doing. God bless them, but they're really not the smartest. They would admit they're not the smartest people.
Yep.
And then, or they're, like, trying to do a good deed and they don't know how to do it right.
Yep.
That's kind of their three things.
Yep.
And it's like, either they think this is going to start a riot and they think it's funny and they don't realize how bad it's going to be, or they really don't know and they're just being incredibly dumb because they are. It's like however many balls they're throwing them again. It's like, it's not even like a soft thing, it's not like a gym ball.
Yeah,
it's like basketball or soccer ball. They are punting these like wide shots into the air.
Oh my God.
And then people are grabbing them and the stuff's taped on. You have to rip off the $100 and like, you don't think someone fought over that?
No.
Or like they ripped it to shreds while they like, and no one talks about this.
No
one talks that this might have been a little irresponsible, that it was all their fault that Woodstock 99 went bad. And I'm sure there were some injuries caused by this.
Almost certainly.
And like, yeah. On one hand, again, I think this is, again, out of the goodness of their hearts. They probably wanted to get people a legitimate refund.
Yeah.
But they did it in the dumbest way possible, in a way that'll get people hurt. And no one, I know it's their shtick, but you should probably hold them a little bit responsible. Because in comparison to what Fred Durst is, that is worse and no
way
one
worse.
Talks about this.
Yes.
And it's like, you think maybe that we should have talked about that, and I'm sure they didn't talk about the producers, but someone could have been on like, no, don't do that. Don't, or anything,
No,
just kick it
again,
in there.
The lack of accountability
is insane.
It's on the
event staff to stop this, too, right? And it is stunning that it seems like not too many people got seriously hurt or anything like that, like, thank God. And I'm not trying to blame, like, oh, it was ICP or anything, because I don't think what they did was really bad or badly intentioned, but I'm just saying
it just highlights that
there are other acts of irresponsibility.
There are so many people further up the chain who are at fault.
Yes, and it really sits on the event staff.
Yes.
It is your event, you cage people in, you didn't give them any way to stop it, you've done this before.
And I'm pretty, if I remember
this is
correctly,
not your first Woodstock.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, one of the rules with it was classic, like, you leave, you're gone rule. Like, you can't come back in.
But
kind
many
of a
people
thing.
Did, by the way. And
I'm sure.
And it's massively reported, especially after the walls were
down. I'm sure, yeah.
And actually, a lot of people didn't even get checked for tickets at the gate because even the ticket booth was bad.
That makes sense.
So, like, a lot of people just went in. A lot of people carried food in.
Mm.
There's actually really good footage by a guy on YouTube I want to mention. The channel's name is Code Red. He had a camcorder at Woodstock, one of the main people who did.
Yep.
But he recorded a lot of it. I didn't try to reference any of his comments just because, you know, what's YouTube comments, not sure if it's really trustworthy, but I trust the footage because that's real.
Yep.
And if you want to read more about what his experience at Woodstock was, that's a really good on-the-ground perspective, but he has footage of a lot of the shows as well, and just the crowd and crazy things going on. So if you want to see more of, like, what the experience truly was, check that first. That's a really good way to look at it. Like, people all have very interesting, like, takes, like, yeah, they just let us in, or like, yeah, we snuck in, or other things, and clearly security was full of holes.
Absolutely.
Clearly. Or, like, I've even heard, again, just the rumor mill where people talk, like, yeah, we brought in instead of, like, a gallon jug of, you know, water, it was vodka, and no one could tell a difference, and stuff like that.
Yep,
and how real it is, who knows, but, like, people talk about the stuff a lot. We're like, okay, some of that's gotta be
something,
real.
Some parts of this have gotta be real. So not all of it's fake.
Yes, it's like, wow, there is some bad stuff going down. And
yes.
Like, again, it's on the event to at least cover some of that. Like, sure, are there irresponsible teenagers and 20-somethings?
Yes.
Yeah. Could they have acted better?
Yeah.
2 days in the heat, covered in poo, no food, no water, Fred Durst,
like,
Insane Clown Posse, Metallica, like, come on.
Yeah, what were you really
have
expecting?
To see it coming.
Yeah.
There's got to be some level of responsibility here.
Yes, exactly.
And it seems like throughout the entire time, MTV and Woodstock did not.
No,
do that.
No, there was none.
If you were there, please send me an email.
Yes. So I think we can conclude our diatribe.
I think that's day two. That's the scary thing. This is only day two.
Yeah. So
can we
real
blaze
quick,
day
we'll
three?
Just mention the rave floor.
Yeah, rave floor.
Because
let's
that
hear it.
So
let's go for
it.
You
got Limp Bizkit, then you follow up with Rage Against the Machine, followed by Metallica. Of course, you're going to go to the rave after that, right?
Oh, of course.
The rave was even more intense the second night. From what I saw, like, numbers were way higher in terms of people who were attending. The biggest notable DJ that night was Fatboy Slim. He was one of the only other members of Woodstock who had to cancel his set early. He did not get the plug pulled on him, however, but we will get to that in a second. So the rave starts, and again, it's just like the last night where there's debauchery and drugs and everything going on all around. And then about halfway through his set, and if you watch any of the documentaries he's in, he talks about it kind of like, he's almost talking about it like he's like, like he felt like he was partly responsible for things at this point of like, okay, I gotta make sure that, like, people just had a really intense day. I need to, like, get people dancing and have big fun and not wanting to kill each other. So, and he tries to do that, but then halfway through his set, a van drives into the middle of the, I don't remember if it was a van or a bus or what it was, but it drives into the middle of the rave.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought
oh,
it was
I think
like
I've heard this, yeah.
Yeah, he thought it was like a moving dance platform or something.
Yeah.
It was not. Security end up having to like stop the guy who's in it. They pull him out. The super long story short of it is there was a guy with a girl, like an underage girl, inside it.
Oh no.
Yeah. Like, not good. Major not bueno.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really big thing that happened that night. Plus, you just get like, because of the events and because of how hyped up people are, because not for nothing, I wouldn't exactly call Fatboy Slim easy listening.
Not exactly.
No, not exactly what I would do to calm down.
No.
Not like, he's Grateful Dead, Fatboy Slim. I think I know which one I'm going with,
yeah,
the calm down.
Yeah, one's more of a chill out music.
Definitely. So the crowd, shockingly, continues to get more and more tense to the point where Fatboy Slim himself literally was like, he got through one song and he was like, nope, I'm done, we're out of here. And literally was out of there. Like, grabbed his stuff, grabbed all of his assistants, they got in their van that night
they
and
drove away.
Yep, they were gone.
Someone took some responsibility for
somebody
something.
Really did.
And he's at the end of the chain on that one.
Yep.
He just said, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, he's like, nope, I'm not contributing to this, I'm out of here, good luck.
Probably the smartest man at all of Woodstock 99.
So that concludes day two.
Oh,
finally.
Day three.
So day three begins, and I'm really glad you kind of mentioned this earlier in day two, that, you know, it's kind of past a certain point, it kind of starts to look like sort of a Nat Geo special, because by day three, that's really when you're sitting there looking like, is this just some sort of social experiment?
It is really weird that people would do this, especially, again, people who are on the first two actual official Woodstocks and probably had some association with the other, like, little ones that came in 79 and 89 are here and working on it. And like,
yes.
How do you just have this blind spot?
How
where
do you
like,
not, like,
like, you should have learned some lessons over 30 years. How
yeah.
did you not?
And so at this point, you've got two major camps that develop right away in the morning.
Let's hear it.
So you've got the people who are bailing and the people who are staying.
Yep.
And the mentalities are completely different. The people who are bailing are out of there. They're
they are
gone.
Not coming back.
They are exhausted. Like, you see videos of, like, MTV talking to them. They're exhausted, drained,
like they've
covered.
Been through a war zone or
literally,
something.
Literally, they
yes.
look like they've just survived. Like, I swear there are some of them you see with like the 1,000-yard stare
yeah.
of just like, the things I've seen. And it's like they are getting out of there as fast as they can.
Fred Durst on plywood, held up by a thousand young souls. I saw bonfires glitter in the dark off the shoulder of that MTV speaker.
So
all of those moments will be lost, like my generation in the poo water.
Like my innocence
in the poo
water. Time to die.
Sorry, I had to do that.
That is great.
Shout out to Blade Runner.
Shout out to Blade Runner. Absolutely.
Thank you, Rucker Hauer. You're cool.
So that's the one camp. The other camp are the people who are sticking around, and these people are hardened. These are the people
that are the scary people.
These
that go
are the people who are here to burn stuff,
break stuff, if you will.
Yes, exactly. So the reports were like on the third day, fighting was common.
Yeah, it was just a riot.
And
basically,
it wasn't even just like moshing during shows. It was like just you'd bump into someone and boom, you're fighting with this guy because it's the 90s and you're a tough guy and so is he. Yeah. And, you know, all the stuff you've gone through the last day, you're exhausted, you're wired, and the heat's still a thing, mind you.
Yeah.
It's still getting hotter.
And I think the fighting's mostly on the outskirts where they can't control anything, because though it seems like the one reprieve is actually the stage area on day three.
Yes, because that's where security is actually doing its
job. And that's where people are getting calmed by music. Also, Willie Nelson is the second act on the third day, and he has the calmest show. I watched the whole thing.
I'm going to get into that in just
a second.
Okay, let's hear it. So before, I want to just note a few things just for everyone at home. Number one, trash, still overflowing, still everywhere. Bathrooms, still even more disgusting.
Worse.
Even higher price gouging going on.
Oh, my gosh.
You can see where this is going at this point. At some point in the day, I sadly could not find a specific time in the day. It was only just, I could tell it from, like, footage. It wasn't, like, a documented thing. This is when people started taking down the fun art walls. It's about midway through the day.
The peace wall. No, not the peace wall.
This is when you've heard of the Berlin Wall. Now get ready for the peace wall.
10 years later.
Mr. Lang, tear down this wall.
He was the guy that wanted the show at the Berlin Wall too.
Yeah, it's ironic. But so the footage for this is some of my favorite footage of the entire show, outside of like Mr. Biscuit's performance.
I like how you call him Mr. Biscuit.
It's respectful.
Is it?
Yes,
I guess. That's better than calling him Limp, I suppose.
So
it sounds bad.
Of these like young 20-somethings you have that are stuck around that are like hardened, they're pissed. And the ones that aren't fighting each other, they need something to break. So they turn to these art walls, and you'll see footage of them literally, again, it's just like the sound tower the previous day and the plywood walls there. They're just jumping onto the stuff and using like their own body weight to like yank and pull it down. You see groups of like 10, 20 people who probably did not know each other working together in tandem like cavemen.
They form gangs and tribes.
Just to rip these things down. They were tearing buildings down and destroying them because they could.
Yeah, you see footage of a lot of people, like they'll grab like maybe they're like actual pipes they stole out of like the plumbing or they're just like metal rods from like stands
and
stuff.
Anything they could find on the ground that was hard.
They'll just start breaking it. Or like I've seen towards the end of the day, you get people burning speakers. Like they pour speakers down. They have big fires.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that too. Yeah. It's just nuts.
Now let's finally get into the lineup for the third day.
Let's hear the third day.
This is just...
The lineup's pretty incredible for the third day.
Okay, so we're going to play a fun little guessing game.
Let's hear it.
I
like
games. We're going to start with the West stage, which was the side stage. I'm going to name the bands. You are going to guess what genre they sing, okay?
Okay, all right.
So to start the day off on the second stage,
I know most of these.
Mike Ness.
Mike Ness.
You probably don't know him, but you may know his first band, Social Distortion.
Okay, I've heard of them. I can't say I'm a fan or anything. I literally haven't heard anything.
You're all
good.
I am a fan of them. I'll fix that for you sometime.
Alt rock?
No.
Punk?
They are punk.
Okay.
Specifically,
well, that name. Yeah.
Specifically pre-punk / first wave punk.
Oh, they're like old. They're like Ramones era.
The next to follow was Our Lady of Peace.
Okay, that one sounds alt to me. But,
close. Grunge. Very, very close.
If you don't know, just guess alt, basically, for 90s bands.
Yeah, with 90s, it's a safe bet.
Yeah.
Also, I should mention, before either of those went on stage, they had a students' right activist group that led weird... Like, it was a sort of prayer / silent moment thing for Columbine.
They did that at the first Woodstock, but it was some, like... Hindu yogi thing.
This was much more like student kind of thing.
And
than
people
like
thought that
spiritual.
Was really weird. Yeah, I remember that was just a weird moment.
So then after Our Lady of Peace, a grunge band. So you've got punk followed by grunge.
Okay, punk.
The
grunge.
Next is Rusted Root.
Rusted Root. Oh, why does that sounds like alt country to me almost.
You probably know one of their songs.
What is it?
On my way.
Oh, that's them. Gosh.
They were the third band to play.
I have never known that band's name.
Yeah, neither did I. I was literally like, who are these people? And like, I'm looking, and then the first song comes up, and I'm like, what the heck? And
I know what that is.
For a second, and I just heard the Ohm, and I'm like,
no.
But yes, that okay. So you get Rusted Root. Up next, Seven Dust.
I know Seven Dust. I can't place their genre, but I know
new
what they
metal.
Are. There you go. I know Seven
so
Dust.
So you go from punk to grunge to whatever On My Way is to new metal to Ice Cube.
Right, Ice Cube was... That's at the emerging artist stage. It's not quite West stage. That's emerging artist. That one's really good.
And then finally you have...
I watched the Ice Cube performance. He actually rocks.
He was great. And then finally you have Godsmack.
Godsmack. Yeah. That's like grungy alt kind of thing. Cause they're
grungy alt metal.
Yeah, that's them.
Which is a weird sentence to say, but somehow it's
they
correct.
Are a weird mix. Because they're kind of like Alice in Chains 2.0. They're weird.
Yeah. And then to round out the night on the West stage... Megadeth,
yeah.
Meanwhile, let's jump over to the main stage.
Two main stages, West and East.
You'll notice
that
the West stage was pretty, like, you know, kind of more hardcore, right?
Yeah.
So on the other stage, the main stage, to start things off, you have Al Green, a classic R&B singer.
Right. Yep, I remember that.
Followed by Willie Nelson.
God bless Willie Nelson. He is the one calming presence at that show.
My next one is my favorite.
I have something to quickly say about the Willie Nelson performance. I watched the whole thing. It is the most calm, little, cute,
it's
Western
good.
Country.
It's a great performance.
He just does a Willie Nelson show in the middle of this war zone, and everyone loves it.
Yep.
The kids go nuts for Willie Nelson.
For an hour, everyone just shut up.
It's just calm.
Stop being angry and just
enjoy
to
your
Willie.
Willie Nelson. God bless his soul. He really, he might have saved this thing. Who knows?
Next up, Brian Seltzer Orchestra. You're never going to get this one.
Oh, gosh. I think I know them a little
this
bit.
This one I had to take the name of the genre straight from their
website. Let's hear it.
They are described as a swing and jump blues band.
Yes, I know that. Yes, I've heard of that. Swing, jump, blues.
Followed by Everlast.
Everlast, okay.
Hip-hop / folk rock / blues.
Yep.
Followed by Elvis Costello,
right?
who is proto-punk.
His weird punky blues, yeah.
Yes. Then you've got Jewel, who's Canadian folk rock pop rock.
Isn't she from Alaska, though?
I think she's Alaskan, but maybe I'm right.
It's the same thing.
Basically.
I think she lives in Alaska
also,
now.
Also, fun
what
fact, she's Kevin Costner's wife now.
I knew that, I think. Yes.
I didn't. I found that out while
Jewel
I was researching
had a really
this.
Weird, weird life.
Really did. I didn't know she was a thing until I watched the documentary for Woodstock 99.
She was big
99.
For a little while. She
never
had
heard
hits.
Of her.
Yeah, she killed her own career literally in the early 2000s.
Doesn't surprise me.
That was weird. That's a story for another day.
Next up. Was Creed.
Creed, I watched that one too. That one's shockingly good.
It's shockingly good, and they bring somebody out on stage. I can't remember who.
No, it's Robbie Krieger from The Doors.
Yes.
Who The Doors did not make the original show. But have you seen any of this performance?
Yes.
This is my moment here. This is a band I have notes on.
Hell yeah.
Let me quickly open the scary black book. It's not that
the
scary.
Black book
it's
of death.
It's just a little book I have with some notes on here. Let me open my notes so that I may find... The Creed. Where's the Creed? There's Creed. All right, so there is a sun setting over the horizon for most of the show. They play at direct sunset. Creed is singing into the sunset this whole show. It's beautiful. And then, as all of it's going on, this is good. Also, people, it's insane how big Creed is. People forget how big.
Oh, yeah.
Even now, they just announced the reunion tour, by the way. Creed is coming back, and it's probably going to sell
out.
Creed is still huge.
What?
Creed is big. It's insane. But they bring out Robbie Krieger. They bring him out because he never got to have his Woodstock moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Morrison is now dead, so they can't really reunite the Doors fully.
Yep.
But they bring out Robbie Krieger for a bunch of Doors songs. I believe it's Roadhouse Blues, L.A. Woman, I think, and then Riders of the Storm, I think.
Sounds
is the
right.
Three. Or it's close. It might not be that order, but that's what they play. And Robbie Krieger, remember, it is 1999. He is wearing an Undertaker, like from WWF, now called WWE.
He's wearing
an Undertaker t-shirt and yellow shorts, and it's little old man Robbie Krieger, and he is playing his heart out with Creed in the most 1990 thing I have ever seen.
Oh,
1999.
That's cool.
I have ever seen. Oh, my gosh. And this is like a serious, like, I am a serious fan of The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this
he's
is
the coolest of all of them.
He is, but it's just like, is he a big wrestling fan, or did he get this from someone because he didn't have a shirt? And I'm like, and it's one of the two, and I want to believe that he's a gigantic wrestling fan.
Absolutely.
This is, again, in the peak years of wrestling. It never got bigger than the late 90s, by the way. This is when you had WCW and WWF on national television. Millions of viewers every week. Like, huge.
Yeah,
and he comes out in that.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And to bring it back, one of the things that I think is really, like, key about this is they bring him out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, remember, we talked about the generational difference before.
Yes.
Most people have no idea who this is.
But like, they went nuts for it.
Yeah, they were just kind of cheering because it was like, oh, some guy who's apparently important to Woodstock. Let's go!
Yeah, well, I think once he mentioned the Doors, because he said he's in the Doors, I think that's when people went, oh, that band, yeah!
Oh, like, yeah, I've heard of
them. Went nuts when he mentioned name dropped the Doors, showing they had staying power.
Yep, and then
huge.
Finally, after Creed, was the final... This is, they're usually reported as the final band to play, but it's actually not true, was Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was their second Woodstock performance. So...
This is where it gets pretty wacky,
this
too.
This is where it gets real wacky. So, with Red Hot Chili Peppers' performance, there's a lot to talk about. For starters, Flea was naked for it.
He usually is, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising.
It's
it had to be addressed.
No one wants to see it. No one does.
Yeah,
but he does
it
this.
Happens, so anyway. But so they come out and they perform, and by this point, like, people are, suffice to say, fairly on edge.
They're red hot, if you will.
Yes. What else is red hot? I'm glad you mentioned
these chili peppers. I'm sorry. Keep going.
So right before Red Hot, I think it's like, I don't remember the exact timeline, but it was either right before Red Hot Chili Peppers came on stage or during Red Hot Chili Peppers being on stage. They wanted to do a like silent prayer, like a moment of silence for Columbine. And so their ingenious way to do this was they were going to give everyone, and I want to say that again for people in the back, they decided to give everyone at this concert a candle.
Oh,
not an electric candle.
I forgot they did this.
An actual lit candle.
Oh, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
After 3 days of being treated like animals in an imprisoned camp with plywood everywhere and garbage, let's just give these people fire. Why not?
And people say Fred Durst was irresponsible. Nonsense.
And this came from Lang himself. This was one of his ideas.
This is literally... They are sparking this quite literally.
Yes.
This makes no sense.
And so... And at first, it starts really peaceful. Because I believe, like, right as they're handing it out, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers starts playing, like, Under the Bridge, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And there's this really... like, kind of beautiful moment.
Sweet
like,
little
hey,
moment.
You know, maybe Woodstock wasn't what we wanted it to be, but hey, at least we still got some good moments out of it.
It's our moment, man.
Yeah, and then Red Hot Chili Peppers began to end. And it was at this point that people, it's hot, they're tired, they're bored, they don't really want to be here anymore, they're kind of upset. People in the background of the main stage start taking pieces of plywood and start lighting them on fire with
the
candles that they have.
A ton of bonfires in the distance.
If you look at the footage... This is a cliche, but it's true. It looks like Apocalypse Now.
And it's pretty darn big fires, too. It must look really cool from the stage, but then being next to it, it's like, there's a fire over there.
I seem to remember Anthony Kiedis, like, walking out on stage when they came to do their encore, and was like, my God, it looks like Apocalypse Now out there. What the heck?
This is also during the time, I think it's actually before they do the encore, they have an announcement over the PA saying, we're going to let the fire department, they basically say, let the nice people do their job.
Yeah, and he literally, like, John Shear, the guy who organizes, like, standing, I was like, make a hole so they can get to it. And the fire department was eventually like, no, we don't. We're good. You were going to just let this burn and we're going to keep ourselves alive.
Honestly, pretty fair.
Yeah, I don't blame them at all. So
they've been hearing the stories out of this place. The news spread fast.
So,
there are state troopers crawling all over this place, by the way, once this.
So we'll get to that in just a second.
Sure.
It's at this point that the story
let's hear it.
You got to get into the timeline of things. Because,
let's end strong.
It's often reported that Red Hot Chili Peppers was the final band to perform. That is not true.
There was a secret act that they kept a secret for the whole show.
That's not what I'm referring to, though. This is a delicious little piece of irony
that I
just have to bring up.
Let's hear it.
So Red Hot Chili Peppers actually took the stage at 8:40 and finished playing at 10:10. Meanwhile, at the West stage, Megadeth took the stage at 9 p.m., meaning that they technically were the last band to take the stage, and they finished their set at 10:15.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is this important, Aaron? It's important because it's hilarious. Because Red Hot Chili Peppers' final song that they played was a tribute to Jimi Hendrix, Fire.
Yep.
Which is ironic because, of course, people by this point are burning things down.
Yeah.
As soon as that song wraps on the West stage, it'd be impossible to tell how it exactly times out, but pretty much as that song is ending, Megadeth starts playing their final song, which is peace sells, but who's buying?
What a fascinating. You can't write that.
You
by
can't.
The way.
It's so cheesy.
But it's brilliant.
It's so good. It's like the poetry is incredible.
Yeah, corporate Woodstock ends with peace sells, but who's buying?
But who's buying?
Oh my
As
gosh.
Everything burns
As
around
it's
them.
All burning an apocalypse now.
Yep.
Oh
so and this is when we get into the crazy stuff. This is the stuff that like
it's all over past yeah, this point. Yeah. Like no
so
one can control
by
this.
By this point, it's the best thing I can describe it is it's like the fall of Saigon because everyone has realized the paint is on the wall. There's nothing we can do. We need to go.
See you later. Funny you mentioned Saigon during the Fred Durst performance. There is a very prominent South Vietnam flag.
I saw that. Yeah.
Which I know that represents the diaspora of the people who had to leave Vietnam yep. after the communists took over, which makes sense. But I have to wonder, like, it's just interesting to see a South Vietnam flag at Woodstock.
Randomly.
That's kind of fun. It's like right next to him on the plywood, by the way.
Yeah,
and, like
someone's
waving it the whole time. It's really interesting to see. So that's kind of a funny
it is.
Illusion.
So let's talk about the fall.
Let's
here.
Talk about the fall.
So
let's talk about
at
it.
This point, every band is bailing. Bailing as fast as they can.
Yes.
Red Hot Chili Peppers was supposed to do like a longer version of Fire, but they just sped through that thing because they were like, we need to go.
Bye.
Yep, exactly. Megadeth does the same thing. There's basically a mass alert that mm-hmm. goes out to all of the journalists that are like, hey, if you want to stay and continue to record, you can go ahead. Your insurance is not going to cover it, and we will not be paying you
literally
for
the
it.
Whole event's basically bailing, too.
Yes,
just get out of here.
The word was, get out. You don't want to be here for what's about to happen, because the writing was on the walls.
Literally, it's the rats are leaving the ship.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So here's where things get really bad. So
you're telling me no one stayed to take responsibility? Go on.
So as they're all bailing, there's been rumors spreading since day one, since before day one,
yes.
that there's going to be a secret band to mm-hmm. come out and play after Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I think that also came from, I don't know if it wasn't advertised as like any specific band, but I think they kept like the final act kind of like hidden.
Yes, they
like,
were they're,
in
they,
the promotions.
And
yeah.
So everyone is, of course, they're rumor spreading the whole way. It's like this like mythic treasure that a lot of the people who hung on for this long
were hoping for someone really
there
big.
There was supposed to be something big. It was the whole reason they've stuck around at
and
this point.
The common rumors, I believe, were like Michael Jackson,
Guns N' Roses,
the Rolling Stones was a really big one.
There were all these like big acts that are like, I can kind of see why people would stick around. What the final act ended up being wasn't even an act.
Yes.
It was a laser light show with a Jimi Hendrix basically Excel presentation just like of images of him like copy pasted as it like badly transitions from one to the next.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of footage of him playing the national anthem spliced in there, but it's basically just old Hendrix photos and pictures put or like a laser light show.
Yes, and as you can probably imagine, this was not what people were expecting.
No, not at all. And the funny thing is that I'm sure you've heard that a lot of people reacted very negatively to it.
Yep.
It's funny, if you read, again, in kind of the areas where you know people who have, like, the footage and they comment on photos or videos and all, there people who, like, they have the camcorder footage and they tell you about their reactions. Again, I know it's YouTube comments, so it's not a great source, but it's interesting. If you read those, a lot of people say that it was shockingly positive. Like, they thought it was cool, but I'm sure it's different experiences for some people.
Exactly, because I'm sure the people who were at the front who were, like, actively watching
probably thought it was cool as heck. Yeah.
But the people in the back who were burning stuff.
Yeah, probably thought, like, what the heck? Probably just made him angrier.
And this was the match to the fire that they needed, because now, all of a sudden, people go into a frenzy. And so it starts with them, they start working together to knock over the speaker towers. And they're not, like, there's footage of this, of them, like, using their hands to, like, rock it back and forth until eventually gets enough momentum and just
collapses.
Whoop, boom.
Boom.
Yep. And it's amazing no one was hurt during that.
I mean, it's shocking there were not, like tons of fatalities during this whole thing.
And so as like this is when the true riot starts.
Yes.
People are fighting, people are breaking stuff. Keep in mind, the merchants like alley is still open.
Oh,
they're still selling things. And guess where security is?
Leaving?
Not there.
Anywhere
so
but here.
Basically, there's a mass like word that goes out to everyone at the merchant booth of like, hey, get whatever you can
and run.
Bolt to the, I think they were told to like go to like basically the rec room or whatever, where they had literally barricaded it like a zombie movie with a vending machine in front of it. Literally.
There's a barricade.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And so then what ends up happening is what I can only describe as like a zombie march, as all these kids who've realized that, well, we're out of stuff to break over here at the main stage, but there's a whole bunch of stuff back over at the merchant's alley we haven't gotten to break yet.
Let's steal stuff.
And so they just book it, and the footage, look, you just see people take off and run all at once into this alley, and they're going in and they're looking for, like, they're ripping open cash boxes trying to find money. People found ATMs that are like,
oh, they're busting
literally
them up.
And the way it's described is like a zombie movie in every source I've seen, because, like, yes, people at first are focusing just on the tents, and then like a movie, somebody notices the ATM and just screams ATM,
yes,
and like that, everyone, group minds, converges on them, knocks them over, and is doing everything they can to beat these things open so they can get their money back.
It's just like, it's all social cohesion has gone out the window.
All
in this
rules
scene
are out the window. All rules have been gone for 3 days because security hasn't been a thing. It's,
yes,
basically been encouraged. You can kind of do whatever you want because nothing's really punished.
Yeah, the best thing they've had is they've had state troopers kind of around the area because they know it's getting rowdy.
But
this is
it.
Also when they start to go in and start just breaking it up because it's become a major problem.
And this is where, to be honest with you, I think the major anti-climax of Woodstock 99 comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is where this is the heroic moment, right?
Yeah.
People are, the revolution has happened, Aaron. We're burning down the establishment. We're destroying their means of production and their means of making.
We're all naked and covered in poop.
We're all naked and covered in poop. It's what the revolution was born for. And then you have flanks of state troopers come marching. And it's like the end of the Blues Brothers,
yes,
where they're just
running.
You see them, each has got like their bulletproof riot shield, and each one's got like a billy club,
yep,
and they walk in, and there's this really intense moment where there's like, it's like Gangs of New York,
yep,
where there's the kids on one side, there's the cops on the other side, they've got their shield wall up, and it's like, oh god, this is about to go off.
Yep.
Like, people are gonna get hurt, and like these two groups come together, and you're like, oh god, what's gonna happen? And they reach out and they basically touch these kids on the shoulder and go home, kid. And in true Gen Xer millennial fashion, they do. They just do.
Honestly.
There's no riot. There's no fight. There's no big war. Nope. Oh, the authorities are actually here. All right, I'm going to go home now.
Honestly, the smartest move.
Absolutely,
yeah,
is. But think about the iconic imagery we could have gotten.
Getting into a fight with the cops.
Well, think about, like, there's so many like iconic photos from like the 1960s civil rights movement,
yeah,
of like, you know, there's the girl putting the flower in like
the
guy's
gun,
bayonet.
Yeah.
There's all those. Think about that. We could have had a 90s version of that at Woodstock with angry Kyles wearing Monster Energy drink t-shirts battling it out with state troopers.
In their Limp Bizkit backwards,
yes,
hats.
Oh my god, yes! And their corn dreadlocks,
oh,
and their leather skirts.
Wearing their Metallica t-shirts.
Absolutely.
And their Undertaker shirts.
Their white Oakleys that they have on.
I mean, I'm sure, right, I'm sure if we look hard enough, there's got to be some good photos.
There's probably,
there's got to be some.
From what I've seen, there is some altercations.
Yes.
Unfortunately, from what I see,
it didn't have that mass wave of violence.
It wasn't,
who
it
you
wasn't
wanted.
Like the mass riot. No, it, yeah, it was just, like, most of it was isolated incident, and unfortunately, a lot of them were along racial lines. If you were a white kid, cops tended to come over and just be like, all right, go home. If you were black, they were not as polite, to put it nicely.
It is a sea of white people watching,
yes,
this concert.
Yeah, there were, if you watch footage, there are, and I'm, this is not racist, this is just factual.
It is.
There
it
are
is
no, like, very few POCs.
People.
Very, very few POCs.
I'd be very curious to see any footage, like, if there's anything of altercations that could confirm or deny that sort of thing, which is kind of hearsay. Because I'd be
right,
very curious
that,
because
that's
it's
where
like,
I too
uh-huh,
with it, why I don't want to talk about it too much more is because, like, I've heard, from what I have heard, this did happen. But I
You
don't
confirm.
Know how much I want to trust it because it's kind of all over
with
the place.
Everything of this that isn't, yep, caught on camera or direct from the horse's mouth.
Exactly.
You can't trust it. It's
exactly.
Like, I don't know.
So yeah, that is the end.
That's it. Yeah.
That's how it ends. It ends with a big police standoff and then being told to go home.
And for the most part, people did. There's still,
yeah,
a lot of fires,
yeah,
though. By the way, there was a whole fleet of trailers set on fire.
Yes.
And there is a very fascinating, it looks like it's from the 60s or even like the LA riots picture.
Oh, god, yeah.
Where it's a bunch of state troopers and they have like the kind of motorcycle helmets with like the riot like,
mm-hmm,
mask on,
yep,
like the plastic. They all have them up for some reason. They're all hanging out and they're just kind of looking off into the distance. And then in the background of them, they're not looking at the burning trailers, but they're in the background. It's a huge line of like Ace Hardware and,
yep,
stuff is on fire. It's like, that looks like an actual riot.
This
picture
looks like a war zone. It
and
looks like a prison riot took place.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, if you read a lot of the articles from the time, again, I'll cite all the ones I can that I found in the description of the podcast here. But a lot of people said, like, yeah, the police actually saved this from becoming a broader riot. It's
yes!
Like, I mean, I don't know if it was Michael Lang or someone else they were quoted as saying, like, it was surprising because at Woodstock, the police actually kept the peace or something like that. It's like, oh, irony is just really spinning in this show, isn't it?
The irony is palpable from beginning to end with this story.
There's
the
a lot of hubris built in this, too.
It reads like fiction. It should have, like, never happened.
And yet it did, and it was a fascinating, like, the funny thing is, too, is I think when people talk about, like, when bad things happen at, like, festivals, especially this Woodstock, I think they think that, like, the acts were bad, and that's part of it. But no, there is not really a bad act.
The acts were incredible. Everyone did great.
It was great music. It's just the circumstances it took place in was bad. But really, it was of the same quality as the other Woodstocks, generally, though I would say that, given the mix of artists, I think 94 is my favorite kind of lineup. Like, that's
for
the obvious pick.
I think that was just the best vibe out of all of them, really.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, I'd rather see 94's lineup than anything else. But like, okay, like 99, you could still, like, I enjoy some Creed with Robbie Krieger in his Undertaker shirt and all that. Like, or Willie Nelson was fun. Or James Brown had a great show.
Limp Bizkit was perfect.
Limp Bizkit was a fascinating, truly a cultural touchstone.
Absolutely.
And it's like, what more can you really say about this show?
Yeah.
Like, what more needs to be said about the whole thing, honestly? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we covered everything as best we could.
And I think a lot of it really kind of speaks for itself.
Again, that's the same thing with a lot of the Woodstocks. I mean, watching the footage, it speaks for itself. It's the behind-the-scenes stuff or, like, things that we can report that we want to cover on this show. And hopefully we did that well. Like, and let us know. Like to hear people's thoughts on
this.
We
always appreciate commentary.
We do. We give it ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. But also, side note, they totally should have had Motorhead at this show. I don't know, were they busy that day? Like, this would have been
given
perfect.
Given the lineup, it would have been perfect.
I know, Lemmy would have loved it. Dude, like, could you imagine if they had ended with Lemmy and Motorhead instead of Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yo.
That would have been a riot. He would have been like, burnt stuff.
He wouldn't have stopped playing until the whole place was burned down.
No, he would have thought, I mean, did you ever hear the thing about he was in California during the LA riots?
Really?
And he said it was awesome.
That's awesome.
He was recording an album and he came out and he saw, oh, everyone's rioting. He's like, this is cool. Darn. Missed opportunity, that one. Mm-hmm. Probably the only artist that I would say that, he should have been there.
Absolutely.
Because I don't wish this on anyone else, but he would have had fun.
Yep.
God bless him. Do you have any more closing parting thoughts? Anything? How do you end this?
I don't know. That's the thing, right? Is like, you take all of this information, all of this stuff that happened, and it feels like it should lead to something, right?
Yeah.
Like, there should be some great big, like, and this is the lesson learned, kids. But there really isn't.
The lesson is just don't be stupid while planning a concert.
Exactly. And it's like, they're like,
and we already knew that from the first one.
Right, exactly. And it's like, there's so much to it, and there's so, like, it could have, like, there's so much that could have happened. It could have gone so much
even
worse.
Further.
It could have gone so much better. Instead, we just end up with this weird middle ground where it's like, yeah, that was a thing that happened, and then we all just sort of moved on.
Yeah, but it is by no means the worst festival I've ever seen.
No!
Like, there are still worse ones that have happened since,
it's
which is insane.
I would say it's probably the most, like, with some recent exceptions, one of the most, like, public disaster concerts, you
for
know?
Sure.
Like, it's one of the ones most in the zeitgeist.
It's also one of the ones that, like, it actually had, like, a show that was good, and, like, artists didn't pull out, or it, like, went on, or that sort of thing. Like, again, the music was not really the problem here for once. Like, there's been bad festivals like that, and then things go wrong.
Mm.
There was music. They did the lineup pretty well, eclectic, but fine.
Yeah.
But everything else was the problem, and that's kind of rare for these sort of things.
It really is.
Also, eventually, we're going to get to another episode that'll be hopefully quick, where we're going to talk about the Woodstocks that didn't happen, because there were still plans after this one. And I have to wonder, did this festival kill Woodstock?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it might have.
Absolutely. The name Woodstock was poisoned before, and then thanks to nostalgia came back. You can't get past this kind of poison.
Yes.
This is just done.
It's so bad that on the Woodstock website, I can go to their shop right now and find Woodstock cutting boards easily, but I cannot find any reference to this whole festival.
Yep.
On the official Woodstock website.
They have
website.
Scrubbed it.
I feel like they've kind of cashed into, because I'm sure they're not happy about, like, the docs, but I'm sure they're also not at, like, unhappy either.
Right.
Because they're probably getting some money out of it too, but like, wow, it's a mess. And today, folks, I leave you on, I wrote down a quote from one of the performers at this festival that I think sums everything up. It is from our dear friend Ice Cube.
Oh, goody.
he takes the stage, right? And he's up there. And as we know, he was in many different groups before going on. He includes a reference to one of his former groups in this quote. It's unintentional, but it's so perfect it sums up this whole event.
Yep.
So I'm just going to repeat it to you verbatim. And I quote, "They called them the flower generation. They called us the natural-born killers. And that's what we are," unquote.
That's great.
Pretty much summed up the whole event right there.
That puts a nice little bow on it. Yeah, that's perfect ending.
Yes, well, join us eventually for part three, where we get to the Woodstocks that didn't happen and what the legacy of this big mess became after that.
Absolutely,
there's plenty more stories, folks.
That's the horrifying part.
All right, you all have a great night. Thanks for listening.
We love you.
We sure do.